Hey, let's start the show.
It's August 1st, 2013. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, Norman Chan. How you doing, sir?
Hello.
That's it?
Just doing all right.
You're doing good?
Yeah.
You're feeling good? Feeling okay?
Yeah. I'm going to change my levels a little bit.
You're going to turn your headphone down? I think you're number two. Is that better, worse, or about the
same?
Yeah, that's fine. Nothing like headphone checks as we're live. You have a really orange computer sitting next to you.
Yes, I do.
And you have a guy in an orange t-shirt sitting
on the other side of you. I thought you were talking about me.
Hi, Wesley Fenlon. How you doing?
Hey, Will. I'm doing pretty well.
It's not a computer.
I'm super orange.
Are you wearing... I know we're not supposed to talk about t-shirts anymore, but I kind of don't care. Is that a...
It's Clint Eastwood.
Oh, it's a Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Not... I was like, it could be a Dark Tower t-shirt.
Nope. Clint Eastwood.
Dark Tower t-shirt would be pretty cool.
It would be.
Yeah. What's going on today, guys? Anything exciting?
There's a lot of tech stuff going on today.
We have a little bit of tech news this week. It's kind of a refreshing change.
John Carmack is dropping knowledge right now.
Even as we speak, he is speaking at a much nerdier frequency and higher pitch.
Much, much faster.
I don't think he's talking faster. It's just a very...
He talks pretty fast.
It's relentless.
Yeah, it's like a nonstop. He steps away to breathe once in a while and looks down at his iPad, but he just goes on and on.
Have you ever been to QuakeCon for one of these keynotes before?
No, I just watched it online.
So I went once or twice. I can't remember. I think twice. And it's... He just doesn't stop. It's
what
like
you're
a filibuster.
If you're paying to go to QuakeCon.
The LAN party is pretty good.
Yeah,
and I think QuakeCon's free,
right.
Actually. Isn't it?
It's even better if it's free. That's what you're getting signing up to go to. You know, not necessarily to compete in the $1,000 Doom tournament, but to listen to John Carmack, watch him talk in person, and give his state of the PC graphics industry.
So... When we were at Max PC 1 year, I went and I live blogged that keynote, and like we've live blogged a couple of keynotes before. It's a little past its live. The day of live blogging is, I think, past us. But you know, whatever. That was 4 hours of him talking at the same pace. He just doesn't stop.
It's a lot of time.
It's like a filibuster. He just keeps talking and talking and talking. And when he runs out of one topic, he just starts on the other one without even saying, I'm going to change topics now. It's just the next sentence goes from waiting
for one entire year. It's everything he's been thinking about that year.
You think that's it? Do you think he has a file like QuakeCon keynote topics?
Yeah. He said he tweeted out that for today's keynote, he had 320 lines of notes.
And each line is what, like 10 or 12 minutes?
Different topic.
So he could go until Sunday, is what you're saying.
Well, Tim Willis will cut him off.
And he has the rare ability to just take exactly what's in his brain and just like one-to-one ratio spit it all out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how programmers work, right?
It's rolled in. Well, it's like one time we played Dominion. Were you there when we played Dominion with Hansa? I don't think you were there that night. So we played Dominion with Hansa. And like you guys have played Dominion, the card game. Like there is a... fairly basic economy in that of victory points, and like if you can keep track of who has all the victory points cards at any given point, then you have a pretty big advantage at the game. And by the end of the third game, I realized that Hansa had the entire game, like the state of the game as a system, in his head.
So he knew exactly how many of each card each person had in their deck.
Yes. And I was like, what?
That's probably giving him too much credit. He won.
I thought that, but like you asked, he was like, no, there are four of these out. And three of them are here, and yeah.
Programmers.
They're superhuman. Superhuman. Let's just jump straight into tech news, because there's a bunch of stuff this week. Moto X, which is, well, according to Stephen Levy, the Google phone. This is what Google...
No, he said not the Google phone.
He said this is the Google phone.
Don't call this a Google phone.
He said it was the Google phone.
I'm pretty sure it said that in the Wired piece.
Yeah, Wired piece, absolutely, like the lead
and
of the
Motorola
story was...
CEO said... This is not the Google phone.
I know, but who do you trust more? Not the fake Steve Jobs or...
I don't trust both of them either.
Right.
I don't... Stephen Levy was not fake Steve Jobs.
No, that was... What's his name?
That was Dan...
Dan Lyman.
Dan Lyman, who used to be of Newsweek.
What did Stephen Levy do?
Stephen wrote books about technology.
Yeah.
He's been reporting on it for 20 years.
Yeah, okay.
Such disdain.
What? books about technology. Yeah. I mean, Internet for Dummies.
Okay.
It looks neat. You expressed disdain on Twitter for this phone.
No, not disdain, disinterest.
Okay. They've done some stuff that's new, and the pitch in the Wired story, at least, we haven't seen the phone obviously yet, but the pitch in the Wired story is that Motorola is executing software, things that can happen only with a perfect fusion of software and hardware.
Set the whole thing up.
So Google bought Motorola a few years ago for a whole lot of money.
$12 billion.
With a B. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of money.
Yep.
Then they sacked a whole bunch of the people that worked at Motorola.
Okay.
And they went from having like 50 different phones to 6 or 7.
Well, and specifically they bought part of Motorola, right? Like
Motorola Mobility.
They bought the phone part of Motorola, not the cable box part of Motorola.
Yeah.
Motorola makes a lot of embedded stuff too. So they bought, I think, only the phone stuff and the cable boxes and like the weird radios that go in airplanes and stuff like that.
So what's happened with Motorola since Google bought them?
They've gone down the toilet. Like, they've had a real bad few years. They haven't had any successful phones.
What were their big phones?
Well, if you think back to the beginning of the Android era,
okay,
you know, 2010,
yep.
2009, 2010, the Droid was the first real Android phone that was on the market. It predated the Nexus 1. It was after the HTC...
what do you mean by real Android phone?
It was the first Android phone for consumers. It ran Android 2.0 Plus.
And this is the one with the keyboard.
This is the one with the slide-out keyboard. And mm-hmm. then they followed that up with the Droid X, which mm-hmm. was a slate phone. It had an on-screen keyboard. I think it shipped with Froyo, but it may have been...
that was very popular.
Yeah. Was it Froyo or Gingerbread? I can't remember.
It was Froyo. And it was very, very popular.
Yeah, a lot of people bought it. It drove Verizon's adoption of... between those two phones and the HTC Incredible, Droid Incredible, that drove Verizon and Android and let them stay competitive in the US when AT&T had an exclusive with the iPhone.
Which is very weird because all of that stuff and Motorola's success very tied to Verizon's marketing of those phones and Verizon specifically their license of the Droid trademark from Lucasfilm.
And those were really guy phones. Like they were marketed for like they were angular and they were cool.
That's what the Stephen Levy story said. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. Many friends. I think Droid was just a well recognized brand.
I would say even more so than Android.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah,
for the first couple of years.
Well, for a long time, that was synonymous with Android. And Verizon's Droid brand was synonymous with Android.
And like you said, it wasn't just the Motorola phone; it was also the HTC Incredible, which was a Droid Incredible.
Right. And then there were a bunch of less successful Droid phones after the Droid X.
They did a Droid 2 and mm-hmm. a Droid 3 and a Droid X2, I think. And
yeah.
Maybe an X3.
And then the Razer Maxes. And even last week, you know, Verizon announced 3 Motorola phones, which we talked about, which were 3 new Droids.
Yeah. So
what makes this different, and how is this development track separate from those phones?
So this is the first phone, as I understand it, that was designed from the beginning, from the post-Google acquisition. It was designed to be the one, the main flagship phone for Motorola. And according to the Stephen Levy article, at least, they designed it to do things that are impossible without hardware and software that are working together, which is a very Apple-y thing to say. But the examples that they gave are things like one of the things we talked about last week with the other two Motorola phones is the 8-core processor, of which it's a dual CPU, 4 graphics cores, and then there's these 2 other cores that they kind of didn't explain very well.
It's kind of a cheater definition of core.
It is absolutely a cheater definition of core.
The way we usually use it.
But and how, I mean, if they're not real like cores, what are they?
Well, so the more details came out with the result of the Moto X stuff. And it seems like one of them is literally a dedicated voice processor. So it is a...
it's a chip.
It's a chip that's integrated on the die that's designed to do language recognition, voice recognition. And from the Wired article, it seems like its whole purpose is to listen for 3 words, which is, okay, Google now.
All right. That's the big thing with this phone.
And the big thing about this phone is that it has the ability to do things that don't require necessarily touch to do them. So you can say, okay, Google now, and it'll turn on your Google Now stuff, and all the other Google Now stuff rolls from there.
That sounds great.
There's another processor that just tracks accelerometer, gyroscope, and that stuff, Compass. And the example they gave is you can pick up the phone, shake it, and that says, oh, I'm supposed to take a picture now.
Like a Polaroid picture. to take a picture.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you shake it like a Polaroid picture, and then you tap the screen, and it takes a picture.
I'm skeptical.
All I know is that every time I shake my iPhone and it pops up the, would you like to undo the thing that you just did? I'm a little bit annoyed. So
I don't even know what it's trying to undo.
Right. That's usually the problem. Like the Google Now thing seems really interesting. I am, after using Glass for a while, the voice, like the ability to just kind of look up when you're in the car and say, okay, Glass, do this. It seems very similar to that. And that is, in private, a very useful thing.
So is that something that's tied to your voice or anyone's voice?
I would hope it's tied to your voice. Otherwise, when you do it in a crowded subway or something, 25 people's phones are going
to
go
off. I think you calibrate it to your voice in the phone.
One would hope that. I don't know. Like, is this predicated on everybody walking around with headsets on all the time?
No.
Or is this, it's just going to do this from your pocket?
Just a microphone. Yeah. Well, you hold the phone up to
you. You take it out of your pocket.
You take it out and you look, you know.
But if you take it out of your pocket, why not just touch the screen? Are we all supposed to be wearing Bluetooth headsets?
I mean, it's the same kind of the same use case as Siri. Why not touch the screen and do what Siri can do? Because you can talk to it. So this is just, instead of turning it on, moving your thumb on the lock screen, clicking the Google Now app, you just say, okay, Google Now.
And is it okay, Google, comma Now? Or okay, Google, comma Now?
I think it's okay, Google Now. Okay, Google.
I think it would have been smarter if it was okay, Google, now.
I'd say it probably works with all three.
Okay, Google, now search for Starbucks. Okay, Google, now take a picture.
Really? I mean, how many?
Okay, Google, now.
Can we talk about the searching? Can we talk about the Starbucks searching as the default demo for any kind of new local search? Because
what's
if you can't
find
a fucking Starbucks, you really need some serious help.
Well, that's the easiest thing the phone could do.
Yeah, I suppose
it's testing the voice recognition more than the search capability.
I mean, I guess this solves the Android problem of not having the home button. Like the benefit of that
some
big
Android
dumb button.
Phones.
Well, no, I mean, but a physical home button that will wake up the phone. Because I don't have any Android devices, haven't used any Android devices that you don't have to hit the actual power button.
Mm-hmm.
Like having that big dumb button on the front of the iPhone or iPad gives them an easy way to say, okay, here's our main point of interface for this device.
So
Android kind of lacks that.
This phone, that voice recognition feature, and which will always be there running somewhere, and they have a feature that will pop the display up, information on notifications without having to touch the power button,
yes,
the sleep button, for notifications for meetings, for all that stuff. That I imagine is very useful in a car if you're in a driving scenario, just like Google Glass doing your Google search while driving. Your hands on the wheel, but then you could say, okay, Google Now, and ask it to do a task, make a phone call, set a reminder, find directions.
Yes. And also things like the meeting, the mythical, I've never gotten this, but if one meeting is running late and you have another meeting scheduled and there's traffic between you and that meeting, it'll say, hey, there's traffic. You need to wrap up this other meeting.
Is that something
first.
That's new to this phone or something that has already
I have seen that listed
for Google Now.
I have seen that listed as a Google Now demo multiple times as, hey, this is a thing it can do, and I've never seen it do that. It's just like the mythical, hey, there's traffic
between.
It seems
between, like something it's easy to fake.
Well, of course.
I mean, easy to test and fake. Just set two meetings, you know.
Yeah, I know. But I've had back-to-back meetings before, and I've never seen that
cross
happen.
Cross town or something.
Well, let's try it. We'll test that out.
Sounds like something easy to test. So what about the hardware in this phone? What does it look like?
Motorola 8X processor.
Okay.
But it's a dual-core
That's as far
processor.
As I got. Well, it's an 8-core processor. 4 graphics cores. 2 CPU cores, the voice core and the acceleration core.
It looks
two
like the
CPU cores.
The main
six. It's a dual core CPU.
The dual core CPU is going to be Qualcomm 1.7 gigahertz Snapdragon S4.
So it's the same as the phones they announced last week.
Same as ones. I mean, those also use the X8 processor, and then the graphics are going to be Adreno 320, which is the same thing as what you'd find in, for example, the Galaxy S4 and the HTC One.
So it is a top of the line phone. There's some customization
options. Except the CPU is dual core, not quad core.
So is that a bad thing?
I don't know. I haven't used the phone yet.
No, I'm just saying, like, your HTC One.
Which is a quad core. It's totally fine. Very smooth.
And battery's fine.
Battery's great.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like that's the thing that scares me about quad core CPU phones is that we'll see horrible battery life. And if the HTC-1's okay, then why not just put a quad core in? Then they could have called this a by 10 instead of a by 8.
I think they also, the probably a voice sensing core probably takes up more power because it's always running somewhere in the background.
Well,
and the battery capacity of Moto X is right around the same capacity as HTC-1. So if they want to maintain that all-day battery life, they had to sacrifice somewhere.
So they, one of the things that they said in the Stephen Levy piece was
super low power.
That thing, if they didn't use a dedicated processor that was tuned for that, then it would be three batteries worth of juice a day to do the always on voice listening. I don't, as somebody who keeps his phone in his pocket about 80% of the day, I don't know how useful.
I think a lot of people
always on voice
put their phones on their desk.
I guess you put it
desk.
On your table, yeah.
Yeah, when you're home on your desk.
The one thing I did think that sounded neat is the NFC based like security stuff. So if it's within range of an NFC tag that you say put in your wallet or something like that, it will unlock automatically, and you only have to type in a passcode if it's further away, if it's more than 5 feet away from your NFC tag.
That's cool. I just
that
get that printed on my skin.
Yeah. It's also a 720 phone, 720p screen.
That's a little weird.
It's AMOLED with RGB stripe, so it's not Pentel arrangement.
It's
of
good
pixels.
AMOLED.
Theoretically good AMOLED, and Moto has used Samsung AMOLED screens before in the past, so it's no reason to not assume that it would be very same. Similar, it's 4.7 inch, so we're talking about the same physical size as HTC One screen, mm-hmm. but a lower resolution screen, less pixel density. The phone in the pictures looks almost the same size as the iPhone, so I think there's very, very narrow bezel around the phone, around the left and right sides of the phone. As the iPhone 5. And
the iPhone 5 has like no bezel around the
right.
Side
so
the
it's going to be a little wider than the iPhone 5, but it didn't look like as big as the HTC One. Of course, we can't tell until we actually get the phone in hand. And the other big thing is that this phone's going to be made in the U.S. So they
Austin,
have a big
Texas,
plant in
right.
Austin. I think it was at least the Wired article said it was originally planned to make Nokia phones, but now. If you want to buy this phone, and it will be on all the carriers
hold on,
in the U.S.
Hold on, but why isn't there a factory making Nokia phones in the U.S.?
Couldn't pronounce it.
Nokia.
You can go to an AT&T store or a Verizon store and order a Moto X and walk out the door with their standard build one, which looks fine, the white one.
Is it out today?
It is out late August.
Okay.
But if you want to customize your phone, and this is one of the big things they're pushing with this phone to really differentiate it from the Droid phones, which have a very distinct characteristic, like you said, hard edges and...
Are you going to talk about the feminine gunmetal. Mystique?
That's Motorola's landing page.
Okay, Kimosabi.
You can choose different colors for this phone, so... You can choose the different materials, different colors, different finishes, and it'll take 4 days for you to get your phone.
4 days is pretty good for that.
You can order online or walk into a store. So four days is reasonable, I think.
And you get something that's a little more custom, and it beats the shit out of sticking a vinyl sticker on the back of your phone.
Probably. The wood veneer is one of the finishes they have. It's... looks okay. I think in those demo stations, they had the wood ones, the wood paneled phones in like jars of pebbles.
Are these actually different? Right. Any different materials they're offering, or is it just?
I think the wood one is
a
actually a different material.
Veneer implies that it's a thin layer of something on top of a thicker layer of something else.
So here's my big. Issue with this phone.
Why are you
and
not
is that, I'm not excited because Google bought Motorola to make phones for them, and they're saying the whole point of this big fluff piece was that it wasn't just about the patents, was that Google wanted Motorola...
Hold on, the Stephen Levy Wired fluff piece?
That one.
Okay.
Was that Google spent several years working on this phone. It ostensibly is the Google phone, but they will go to all sorts of lengths to say that this is not... the Nexus phone, and that Google still will run its Nexus line as a spotlight of what Android can do.
Well, which is so weird and confusing.
And they went to great lengths to really clarify that the hardware is so important in this Motorola phone that it doesn't matter that it's only running Android 4.2.2, that all the benefits of Android 4.3 they'll have to integrate later. That trust us, the updates will come quickly, which we've heard many, many times in the past.
Ask Droid X users how they feel about that.
And also reinforcing the fact that they do not get any special treatment for Android over other OEMs. And Google's playing this. I just don't get why they just don't make this the Nexus phone.
Well, I can explain that.
Why?
Because Samsung and Google are the only ones making money on Android phones right now.
So who
now.
Cares?
So if Samsung stops making Android phones
Samsung's fucked.
Or pulls a Kindle and just takes off of all the Google skin and just uses the kernel and builds their own shitty UI to go on top of it.
Then Samsung's fucked.
I don't think so. I think that at this point, Galaxy S is a big enough brand that they'll keep selling
absolutely
phones.
Not. I think Google still controls the OS. They control the release. And if they... and. People try, and the services are such an important part of the phone.
Well, that's true.
That if you have the best integration with Google services, then you're the phone, and you have the best hardware, that's the phone that's going to sell.
Well, except for the Nexus phones aren't the best sellers on the platform. So that's by your that's argument, because, the Nexus phones should be the best sellers on the platform.
They should be, but because they're released in a weird time. They're released, they're expensive when they're released, or they're doing weird things like the Nexus 4.
Mm.
Which is not the best hardware.
Which was not the best hardware at the time it was released. Maybe. I don't know. I look at this two ways. It could either be like the really neat integration and cool stuff that we've never seen before in a phone, or it could also be the shittiest custom manufacturer Android skin we've ever seen on top of some kind of middling hardware.
Well, it's basically stock Android with just like the camera is a little changed, the notifications are a little changed, and there was one other... aspect that was tailored a little bit.
The stuff they had to do to make the always on voice and the shake to camera and all that stuff.
Which means those features will not make it onto other phones. They will be exclusive to Motorola.
Right.
And yet they spent several years building up this goodwill for the Nexus brand, and now they're saying, hey, you can wait for get a Nexus phone, which probably won't have these cool features that we're introducing on our not Google phone, or you can buy a Google phone, which also will not have the great Nexus experience that we've touted for many years.
But guys, they're going to have to compete just like all the other manufacturers.
That's stupid. That's really stupid. They should just make Motorola have the Nexus line. If they spent $12 billion, let's say half of that was for patents, because that's what the patents were worth, and half was for a phone company. If they wanted to keep on having a phone company, then they should use their full power of their hardware and software.
So is this a step in the right direction for Motorola?
I think it's the only direction they have.
Making one good phone instead of four. Okay. Making four good phones instead of 35 phones, or 45 phones, whatever it was they had 3 years ago.
I think regardless of number of phones, more of a release schedule thing. And another opportunity for Google to tie the phone release with major software releases.
Well, except for they're not releasing – except for they have a major software release last week, and the phone isn't tied to that. I personally think that the major software release on Android is becoming less important as Google is pulling out the key pieces of user-facing software and making them separate from the OS. That's one of the things I really like about Android is that Google will update Gmail independent of annual OS releases, where Apple is never going to mail. All the core Apple apps are tied to that OS, which means they're really fresh in September and really stale by August.
Yeah, I think Android really needed 3.0 and 4.0 and 4.1 or 2,
yeah.
And they've kind of gotten to the point now where they can be a little more specific in what they target and upgrade, because the rest of it is pretty solid.
It's like Linux. Like, once the Linux kernel hit 2.2, it was okay. You were probably pretty good, assuming you didn't have specific hardware needs. I think they're in the same boat now, and let the core experiences upgrade independently, and the point releases are less important until Android 5 comes out.
Maybe they just don't want this part of the Motorola to succeed. Maybe this.
You think they made a $6 billion tank job?
Maybe
that seems a little crazy.
I mean, there will also be a Google Play edition of this phone, which is the mind boggling.
You mean a pure Android?
Not pure Android. Android pure-ish experience.
Similar to the HTC One and the
it will be
Galaxy
a
S.
Play Edition sold at the Google Play
for full
Store.
Price
for full price.
So $600.
They haven't said the pricing yet.
Mm. I wonder if will the voice stuff and all that.
I feel like that'll be the.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's going to be the exact same phone, just not on a contract.
Maybe
and unlocked probably.
What carriers have they announced this on?
It's every carrier.
So Verizon, CDMA, and GSM in the U.S. Mm-hmm. $299 on contract,
$199.
Oh, that's good. And for the 16 gig one?
Yeah.
And $299 for the 32?
It might be $250 for 32.
Huh. Interesting.
This is not the bold statement I thought they were going to make.
It seems so confusing to me that this is not just like the Motorola Nexus.
Yeah, the Google Nexus phone.
It's not like Samsung is the only company doing Nexus. Like Asus does the Nexus 7, right?
Right, and LG did the Nexus 4.
Yeah, so clearly they work with different people for those phones. I mean, HTC did the first, two Nexus phones, or at least
Samsung did the second one.
They did the first one. Yeah. Obviously, HTC's kind of been out of the picture for a while, but
they've had a bad few
like
years.
Clearly Samsung, LG, Asus, all important partners to them. Why would this not just be another Nexus phone?
I think there are a lot of politics because Motorola is run as a subsidiary and with offices in somewhere close to Google and also in the Midwest. And I'm sure there are people in the strictly Android department saying, wanting to maintain all these OEM relations, regardless of what might be better for Google as a company as a whole, and also maintaining this, the don't be evil mantra, which, really, I think it's holding them back, the facade.
You think they should be evil?
No, I think they should not have to pretend to not be evil while still doing evil things.
Here's the thing. God, that's super cynical, Norm. Here's the thing is, it is in Google's best interest for Android to be a robust platform that multiple vendors participate in. If they do the thing that Microsoft did with the Surface and make Android unfriendly to third parties, then they're going to be in the Microsoft boat.
I don't know how that would make them unfriendly to third parties. They're doing Play Editions. HTC had a Play Edition.
But they
Samsung
did that for
S4s.
Everyone.
Had Play Editions.
That's different than saying, there's a difference between saying, hey, you can get this in the plain vanilla flavor in addition to the vendor specific flavor.
I don't think
saying, hey, this is the one that's
right,
the one to
but
get.
But I don't think those vendors want the vanilla flavor. Those vendors with their own agendas want their skin versions.
I think those vendors realized that they had to make the vanilla flavor. They're giving us our cake. We have bitched about not having the vanilla flavor for 4 years now.
And so we have that.
And so now we have
relatively vanilla flavor in the Play Editions.
Yeah. And now we can't complain about that. So that lets them go wild on the shitty vendor skins. And then if you want to pay more and get the vanilla,
so why not? Then why not again?
Well, they're doing that with this phone too.
Why not again decide the Motorola is the Nexus phone?
Because if they say, "Hey, we're Google, we make the OS, and we make this phone," how long do you think Samsung is going to keep releasing phones using Android if there is Ubuntu or Firefox or somebody else or Samsung themselves making their own version of the OS?
Good luck.
Will fork Android just like Amazon has been fine forking Android.
And that's okay.
It has worked wonderfully for them.
And it's still using Google services, so Google still wins.
No. There is a Gmail option, but it's not like they're using the Gmail app. Remember, Google is selling you. You are the product. Right? You, the user, are the thing that they sell to advertisers.
So you're saying Google is very afraid of Samsung and HTC going the Amazon route?
I would say more Samsung than HTC because HTC doesn't have that many options.
Yeah, nobody kind of cares about them, sadly.
I mean, if they make a phone and they sell millions of units, then yes, everyone will care. But right now, Samsung has the vast majority of people using Android buying their devices.
Dare you, Samsung. I dare you. Go do that. Go play Amazon.
But
and you know what? Let's see how many Kindles they sell compared to the Nexus 7.
There was the first generation of their Android skinned phones were so shitty, and there was no impact because the second generation sold better. Like, there's no negative, there's no downside to them doing their own thing at this point. The Galaxy S is a huge brand.
The downside is they don't have the OS infrastructure.
But it doesn't matter because they can still use Google for the stuff that they want. They just don't run the ads and they don't run the core Android experiences.
I don't think you can run the Google stuff without running the ads.
Fuck yeah, you can.
How do you run like Google Search without running the ads?
You run Gmail with IMAP,
like any other mail client. Like search.
And so then Google Search is the one thing that you still have to do. Or they make a relationship with Bing.
I mean,
let's not get crazy.
You can run Gmail in Windows phones and Google still wants you to do that because you're still going to use Gmail on desktop and then you still see their ads.
Yeah, but that's just the barest surface of what they want. They want people using Google Plus, and they want people using Google Plus images, and they want people using YouTube and all these other things. And those core, like the way they do it is by getting them to use people to use the basic core Android, the one that we already have. If Samsung pulls out of Android front end, Google has a problem right now.
I don't think they can pull out of Android front end and still have experience that people are going to want.
But once people buy that phone, it'll be 2 years before they can get back out. If the Galaxy S5 uses a Samsung specific skin,
and Samsung will have burned people for 2 years,
and they burned them with the first generation of Android phones, and they lined up for more.
That's because they got better.
I know,
and I don't think they're going to get better.
It'll get worse once, then it'll get better for a few years. It's one of those stair steps. Anyway,
Google needs to step up.
Imagine a world, Will.
Imagine my refrigerator
and
my phone
Samsung
talk together. Good news.
If they want to keep a $6 billion investment, worth it.
Yes. Netflix. There's some Netflix news.
Okay.
Profiles. Do you know about Profiles?
I haven't used them yet.
Profiles or profiling?
Profiles.
Think about it.
They've always been profiled.
Yeah, they've always profiled. You're the customer. I mean, you're the victim. You're the user.
They ran a contest.
You're the sales.
Whatever, all of those things. You're the product.
They did run a profiling contest.
They paid someone $1 million.
So right now, I have a bit of a sticky wicket. Because my wife and I share the same Netflix account.
What now?
It's a sticky wicket. It's a cricket term, I think. It's like I talked
to Gary
the other day.
Is that a character in Star Wars?
No, that's Wicket W. Warwick. He's a little person.
His real name is not Wicket.
Yeah. That's the Ewok's name.
I know.
That's
the Wicket's name is...
No, his
Ewok's name is Wicket, and Warwick Davis is the name of the actor.
Yeah. But the character's name is Wicket W. Warwick when you buy the action figure. Okay. The Kenner action figure was Wicket W. Warwick because it's Warwick Davis.
Just wanted to clear up.
I know.
Not his real name.
Established fiction. So my wife and I share a Netflix account, which is great because the recommendations have become useless as a result of this. Because I watch,
but then you're also more aware of what your wife is watching.
I don't care what she watches. This is the lesson you learn.
Do you watch the Ewok Adventure movies on Netflix?
Are they on Netflix?
They're probably not.
Oh, God,
I'm sure they're not.
They were.
But they're great.
Actually, no,
they're not.
Great.
They're bad. They're
really
bad. The first one's terrible. The second one's actually pretty good.
Is the second one the one with the Jabberwocky?
Right? So the first one, they go on their like magical quest that's kind of... With the kids. The parents have been kidnapped.
Yeah.
To go fight some like giant monster thing. I don't know.
And it kind of looks like a Rancor, as I recall.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
But anyway, they save the parents. Everything's happy, blah, blah, blah. Second movie opens with the little girl's entire family being murdered in 5 minutes.
Wow. That sounds pretty good.
And the Ewoks and her are enslaved by some like
great
some dudes who look like sand people.
Okay.
And then she's all alone and she and Wicket escape and Wilford Brimley saves them.
Wilford Brimley's in that. I totally forgot.
Yep.
I watched this when I was on like network TV when I was about 10 and they were terrifying.
The second one,
were
actually,
they originally TV movies?
Yeah.
They're TV movies.
The second one actually kind of feels like Star Wars. The first one is just like bad fantasy set on Endor.
Are they all on the Force Moon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The first one I remember could have been like, guys are probably too young, but ABC used to do like a Sunday night Disney movie.
Yeah.
Like there was the wide world of Disney, and sometimes it was science fiction, and sometimes it was fantasy, and sometimes it was like something that was badly animated for TV.
The golden age of TV movies.
Yeah. And those felt very much like that, but I think they were on Thursday night. It was a weird time for
them. Now it's all Lifetime.
Yeah. Did you ever watch the animated Star Wars cartoons, the Saturday morning cartoons?
No,
Droids
but
and Ewoks?
I had a book spinoff, like that was the Droid Adventures, whatever.
Did it come with a
version.
Record?
No.
Oh.
It was like a
boy, I wish I could watch these on Netflix.
They had the network, they had like the record storybooks. Like, remember the little books that you would take? But you guys don't remember this.
It was cassettes in my
name. No, cassettes.
They were cassettes.
It sounded so much
storybook
better on
cassettes.
Vinyl. You'd put them on your little 45 player and it would tell you a story. The little house was my favorite.
Little House on the Prairie.
Boy, I wish I could watch these on Netflix.
Just Little House.
And Profiles.
Oh, you're tying this back in? That was a great segue, Norm.
So your problem with your wife?
My problem is that I watch one type of programming. She watches a different type of programming. So our...
Maybe it's a subtle influence thing. Maybe it's like the hint. Maybe you should watch more comedy.
It's probably true.
Animation. What does your Netflix recommendations currently say then?
Do you want me to why don't you talk for a moment and explain what Profiles are, and I will go look.
So Netflix now allows family members who share one single Netflix account, up to 5 people within our household, to create user profiles. For each profile can be associated with a Facebook page, so you can tell your friends what you're watching, or more importantly, set your own instant queue and get recommendations based on what you individually are watching as opposed to what you and your family may be watching. So what are your recommendations, Will?
I don't see recommendations.
I got witty workplace TV comedies.
Ooh, that's good.
Goofy sitcoms.
So hold on, what's witty workplace TV comedies? It's Archer, Workaholics.
No, it's The Office.
The Office, Parks and Rec, and
Todd
Community.
Margaret, Better Off Ted, Cheers.
Now, your Netflix account has been polluted by things that have
well, you have a
other
whole house of assholes on yours, right?
Like,
it's great. Things look great. I got a whole thing of, you know, Star Trek stuff.
Like, how it's made probably has its own, like, heavy weighting in your on your Netflix account.
You guys watch a lot of How It's Made?
We have a housemate that watched a lot of How It's Made.
I can see that.
And I watched every, well, not every episode on that account, but I watched a lot of Buffy and Angel.
I have Say Yes to the Dress. Oh, top 10 for Will. The Avengers, It's Always Sunny, Family Guy, fuck you, Netflix.
A lot of Portlandia.
Bob's Burgers, That 70s Show, Wilfred, The Expendables 2, The New Girl, Mulan, Hunger Games, Avengers, and
Who's Going Back
Around.
Yeah. Yeah, I got some pretty good recommendations. I mean, those ones don't sound bad.
It's not terrible.
I don't some, think profiles probably more useful for people who have,
well, if you have kids. Yeah.
Who watch a lot of Dora. But no longer on Netflix.
The thing is, if somebody goes deep down a hole, like if say Gina was good to watch the whole run of, I don't know, Scrubs
or Cheers. Why would anyone do that?
Or Cheers is good though. I like Cheers.
Cheers is good.
Cheers.
Scrubs was good too.
Scrubs is okay, I guess. Okay, so well, Weeds is okay too. This isn't as maybe she's not watching as much Netflix now as she used to. But it used to be that occasionally, like you'd see, like there was a lot of. Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell's daughter,
Kate Hudson
and Matthew McConaughey romantic comedies, because there's a shitload of those and they're all really bad.
Better than Katherine Heigl.
Well, I mean, we have standards in my house. Knocked Up is the only acceptable Katherine Heigl movie, and it's borderline,
which she apparently hates.
Well, of course, because it's actually funny. Okay, so profiles. They used to do this with discs. You used to, if you had a disc plan. You could say, okay, I have 3 discs a month. Give this person 2 discs. Give this person 1 disc. And then everybody could manage their queue independently, which was great. Worked really well.
All right. Be rolling out soon.
Are they going to have additional charges for that, or is it?
Nope.
It's just free.
It's free.
So you did like.
Five is the limit.
Five is the limit. Okay. Very good. So you're going to give everybody in your house a Netflix profile?
I don't know why I shouldn't have 3 profiles.
You're like, there's anime norm.
Yeah, I can.
There's reality TV norm. Yeah. And then there's movie norm.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
If I'm paying for it.
So does that mean that you'll log into like your Apple TV and stuff like that with each individual?
No, you
account?
Can select in the menu. You just click switch profiles. You can switch them on the fly.
In the menu on the device?
On the device or on the website.
So everybody's going to have to update their clients?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why the rollout is going to take more than
a while. Okay. Intel is getting into the Raspberry Pi business. Not with a Raspberry Pi, obviously, but
kind of.
I guess it's a little bit expensive.
Yeah.
So they have this thing called the Minnow board. It's, I assume, an x86 processor.
Yep. It's an Atom
system on a chip, one board with a CPU. But it's like, whereas a Raspberry Pi is like $25 or $30. How much is this? Like $50?
$200. It's kind of more.
Wait, what?
It's kind of more like a mini ATX, I guess. Is the It's
mini
somewhere,
ITX.
Yeah. ITX. It's
mini
somewhere
ITX.
Between that and the Raspberry Pi.
So, like, what's the use case? Like, robots and home entertainment systems and
I mean,
stuff like that?
It's expandable in the same way. It's open source, so you can design your own boards to connect into it.
Is there a PCI slot?
Yeah.
PCI Express slot?
Yep.
Okay.
I think that's kind of the difference between that.
Is it like a laptop one, or is it like a real one?
I assume it's small.
Could you put a video card in this thing?
Probably.
That sounds pretty cool.
It's just a tiny computer.
When is it out? Do we know? They said?
I think now.
Now.
Yeah.
Oh, you can buy it.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. And what's the power? It's an Atom, so the power draw is going to be real low, right? It'll be like 3 watts or something, or 5 watts.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how low, but low.
That's good. Speaking of externally expandable, very small machines, somebody kludged together a Thunderbolt to PCI Express, sorry.
To Express Card.
Express Card to PCI Express chain, and then plugged a real video card into a MacBook Air using that.
And it didn't blow up.
Played Crysis.
That makes sense. I mean, theoretically, like in theory, that should all work just fine. Should be really easy.
I don't know about should be really easy, but.
Well, if you spend enough money, it should be really easy.
Well, and you're doing something that Intel has seemingly deliberately not certified Thunderbolt to do.
I don't understand why they haven't done that.
They apparently are not real into the idea of external GPUs. I don't know why. Maybe it's because they want that adoption of their integrated stuff.
Well, Intel's not really into the idea of GPUs if you get right down to it.
Yeah. So for whatever reason, like I did a quick write-up of this thing for the site, and one of the things I mentioned was last year at CES, Matt and I went and saw this MSI external Thunderbolt video card thing they were doing. I think they were just selling a box, basically, that you would put a card in, or maybe it was a whole card.
It's basically just a bridge, though, right?
Yeah, and so that was 2012 that we went and saw that thing. And I don't remember, he was the one who wrote it up, and I can't remember if they had a plan for when it was going to come out, but presumably it was within a year and a half, which is how long it's been since that happened. And they weren't the only people working on that, and none have come out. So something weird is going on with Intel wanting to approve that stuff.
Well, yeah, because Intel owns the IP on Thunderbolt, and I mean, there's relatively limited bandwidth on even a modern Thunderbolt line compared to a 16x PCI Express 3 slot inside a PC. So maybe they're concerned about bandwidth issues, but it seems like maybe they just don't want this kind of product category to happen.
10 gigabit is pretty good.
Well, but when you look at like memory bandwidth for graphic stuff, it depends on what resolution you're running. Like if you plug that in and expect to play it like 2560x1600, you're going to have problems.
Sure.
But if you're
such a small market also that I don't think that they really care for it.
But the guy who hacked this thing together with the adapter he was using, it was dropping from 10 down to 5 gigabit. Uh-huh. And he was still getting like 5-6 times the performance of the integrated graphics.
And playing it on the integrated monitor.
In OS X, right?
No,
in Windows Boot Camp, yeah. So he said like you can use this other thing to get a full like 10 gigabit from it, but it's going to cost $300 instead of $150 to buy this adapter, and also it's not designed for dual bay cards, so you're going to have to like take it apart and do some funky cabling. But there is another box that somebody is making right now that's just waiting to get certified that is a actual case for a graphics card to connect over Thunderbolt, full 10 gigabit and everything. So that would be a way better solution if Intel gives it the thumbs up.
Chooses to.
Yeah.
The thing I'm really interested in that I haven't really seen yet, and you've seen kind of glimmers of it, is there's not even any really Thunderbolt docks. Like I would have expected a series of Thunderbolt docks to pop up that have USB 3 external audio.
There's some for MacBooks. There was two Kickstarters last year that did it.
Okay, so stuff you can actually go buy, though, not stuff that was kind of limited run or whatever. Like there's the bridge that this guy used, which is a PCI Express card bridge, which goes from Thunderbolt to Express card, which is specifically for video people who need like FireWire and stuff like that. And then there's not much else. There's a lot of drives, and there's things that let you hook up multiple monitors. But there's not something that lets you just plug in power and this wire to make your laptop into a desktop, essentially.
I wouldn't say there are a lot of drives either. I mean, comparatively. But
there's more than there were 6 months. Like,
sure.
Into year two of Thunderbolt, there's way more than there were. And they're kind of more like you can buy a LaCie USB 3/ Thunderbolt drive that is a $50 premium over a normal hard drive, a normal USB 3 drive, well, instead of a $200 premium.
Outside of MacBooks, we're not seeing Thunderbolt in a lot of laptops.
Well, Sony Vios. Okay. Sony's still selling laptops?
All right. Well, but I'm not sure that they're actually using, they're also, I think, not technically using Thunderbolt. It is like the Lightning port, but it is not the licensed Thunderbolt connector or
Sony.
Something weird like that.
Really?
I think so.
How is that?
Maybe that changed. But yeah.
Because remember, Thunderbolt, when released in the MacBooks, was not the final spec for Lightpeak.
Right, that's true.
It's using copper. It's not optical.
So more Thunderbolt stuff would be cool, but it seems kind of...
And Intel still wants to push USB 3 and 3.1.
Another excellent segue. So yeah, 3.1 is out. The spec is done. Is that what it is? Or can you actually buy stuff now?
Be very careful when you talk about specs for USB, because this consortium there are very many layers of approval. They have to approve the spec, and then I don't think there's one like done for the spec.
3.1 is announced. They said, yeah, we've done it. We've gotten 10 10 gigabits.
Doubled the speed.
On USB 3, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's coming out next year, probably something, sometime.
Still many, many steps in between that and physical products.
Okay. So
and the bottom line is new hardware is required.
On both sides.
So I think in the near future, they will be getting everything, whatever, out to Intel, AMD, Asus, you know, blah, 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 to make chipsets and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it is done in the sense that they can give those people the information they will need to make hardware.
And
but,
get that hardware
but
certified.
Who knows when that stuff will actually come out next year.
And since it took Intel, like 3 years to get USB 3 on the chipset in the first place, we should probably expect to see USB 3.1 controllers from places like HighPoint and Promise for a while before we see them from Intel and
AMD. I feel
like
since it's basically... since it uses the same architecture as USB 3, they'll probably beat a lot quicker this time. But okay. Who knows?
Hey, it could be easy spec update for next year's chipsets.
Do you really need to go from 5 gigabits to 10 gigabits? I mean, 10 gigabits, this is for people who are hooking up like big RAID arrays with SSDs and stuff in them to their computers.
Everything can always be faster.
It's good future-proofing.
Well, but if you're putting out like a physical hard drive in, they're not going to run anywhere near 10 gigabits. If you have a portable hard drive that you use to make your laptop bigger...
I'm talking about like flash memory.
I'm talking about like a external portable hard drive.
For spinning drives that move at 30
doesn't
54
matter.
100 RPM.
Yeah.
Not going to matter, but with USB keys reaching 64 and even 128 gigs with real controllers inside. I mean,
so USB SSDs is what we're talking about basically.
Yeah.
Okay. I could see hitting that 5 gigabit cap pretty, you know, in the next couple of years
with an expensive SSD.
So it makes sense that they're okay. Just get it done now.
Fair enough.
And that makes it a viable alternative then to Thunderbolt being using USB as external storage.
So speaking of Apple stuff, let's talk about iPad mini Retina rumors this fall.
Back and forth.
It either will or won't have a Retina screen.
So hold on, Wes. Let me get you on the record.
There are two questions.
I'm 100% sure that there will or will not.
Two layers of questioning. One, whether there will be a mini refresh this fall, period.
Yes.
And two, whether that mini refresh, if it does happen, will have a Retina screen.
No.
All signs at the Wall Street Journal point to yes for both.
Which is it? Is it no or yes?
I think it's going to be one of the two.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I agree.
I don't think... I think Apple is going to... whether they need to or not, Apple is going to refresh all of their iOS devices every year.
They did do the iPad twice last year.
Right. So they're averaged out. We're good for another... We got another 6 months and we're totally cool.
I think that we're going to see a thinner full-size iPad, thinner and lighter, as the full-size refresh. And I think that the mini will get a refresh with Retina to really boost up their Q4 earnings.
I think a Retina mini, if they can do it without killing battery... is a wonderful device, and I would go out and buy one on day one. And that's probably the only thing that's going to get me to upgrade an iPad this year.
And it all depends on... I mean, the pricing is probably going to stay the same.
Yeah.
$330.
Do you think this will be the year that they really go... really vary the product line with the slightly, you know, more powerful iPhone, smaller iPhone,
yes,
all that
absolutely.
Stuff? Like just
yes.
I think we'll see two new iPhones.
Either yes or no.
Okay.
I think one iPhone, as we've seen from some of the photos of the casings, will be the they all have the same 4-inch screen, but we'll have the slightly bigger body with the colors, and one will have the faster processor. And
so you think there'll be two same size iPhones?
No, not same size screen iPhones, but the physical size. One will be like thin and slim, and the premium one. That's going to be the one with potentially the high FPS camera video recording. And one will be the same 4-inch screen, but a little fatter than the iPhone 5 right now with a plastic backing, cheaper to make, probably a little cheaper, and that will probably replace the 4S because they really can't use the 4S anymore. The 4S will probably be the free phone, but this will be the $100.99 phone. That will be the budget iPhone.
The 4 has to go away, though.
4 has to go away. 4S, I think they'll keep as the free. The $100 on contract will be the fat 5, and that will
have...
You
mean the current 5?
The fat current 5 with the plastic back and multicolors, and the $200 on contract high-end refresh will be basically the same design as a 5 with better chip and better camera inside.
Hmm. And maybe the thumbprint on the home sensor?
I don't care about that.
Okay. Good to know, Norm.
Therefore, it will not exist.
It will
doesn't
not exist
in Norm's mind.
No.
I would
it
love.
Doesn't matter. I'm on HTC One now.
A Retina Mini with a more faster than iPad 2 processor would make me a very happy little boy.
All our wishes will be horses.
I wish I had a horse. No, I don't want a horse at all. SkyDrive. Remember SkyDrive?
Yeah, of course.
It's Microsoft's cloud storage, everything catch-all bucket for information of yours on the internet that you don't want to have on just one computer. Can't be called SkyDrive anymore.
Rebranded as McDougal's.
So Microsoft was sued by what I understand is like Sky TV in the UK. It's one of the big
They're a big deal.
They're a satellite.
I think they
or
show
something.
HBO stuff.
Seems right. Like they're a premium channel in the UK. I'm sure everybody's going to let us know how wrong we are.
I think they show Game of Thrones. I could be wrong.
Okay, that's where you go to get Game of Thrones in
Sky.
Old England.
I think so. Yeah.
So they sued.
They have a bunch of channels, I guess. But
it's like DirecTV.
Sky One.
Are they the DirecTV or are they the Comcast or the HBO?
I think they have both original channels and are a mechanism to get channels to people.
So
I think they do both. So they're Comcast.
They're Comcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
The new Comcast, so not the old Comcast.
They're Xfinity.
Yeah. They sued Microsoft because they have trademarks over Sky, and lo and behold, Microsoft lost, is not going to appeal, and so SkyDrive has to change its name. It's unclear to me whether this is just in England or if this is worldwide. This
I think it's worldwide.
Because, you know, in the UK, Gmail is called Google Mail because there was already a product called Gmail in the UK, and the rest of the world still calls it Gmail, but in the UK, your Gmail is called Google Mail.
God damn it, UK. We're already using the imperial system for everything.
Well, that's a good thing.
If they want us to stick
with them.
What are
we, a bunch of fucking communists? Metric? How many kilograms do you weigh, Norm? Right, that's what I thought. How many deciliters in a decaliter? You don't know. It's 100. It's 100.
100 which?
Deciliters.
In a decaliter?
In a decaliter. Because a decaliter is 10 and a deciliter is a tenth.
Wouldn't it be sad if your life depended on making some metric conversions?
So it's like Die Hard with a Vengeance?
Yeah.
You have 3 liters in one bucket
except
and 5 liters in the other?
Except that was just a... that puzzle was independent
Simon
of,
says.
Of what the measurement system was.
That is very true. I think but the UK is weird, though, because some things they use imperial for and some things they use metric for. Like, they weigh each other in stone. I don't even know what the fuck a stone is.
Like
I think a stone's 20 pounds,
it's like
isn't
a
it?
Scone, but harder?
Nope.
It's like
a
score.
Unit of weight.
Four score, four stone.
Four score is 2 weeks.
Isn't four score it? Is 2 weeks?
Oh, no. A score is 20. What's a fortnight? Is that 14 days or 24 days?
I think a fortnight is 2 weeks.
How long is a night if you're in a fort? There's different units. One is metric and one is stones.
Have you ever heard Bill Cosby's Noah and the...
Putting
no on God.
No.
Bit. What's a qubit?
Well,
it's classic.
Oh, okay. I'll. Hey, guys.
God talks
I'll
to
I'll
Noah.
Trust you.
And he
Ryan.
Says, build an ark 80 qubits by 80 qubits.
I could go for a pudding pop right now.
Noah said, what's a qubit?
Pudding pop.
What's a qubit? And that was that the whole bit?
No.
Didn't he watch Indiana Raiders of the Lost Ark? We know about qubits from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
This was.
Because it's seven qubits
like,
high and you take one off. Because the Nazis don't have that. They have a shorter stick.
I don't know how much you know about Bill Cosby, but he's been around longer than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
My parents saw Bill Cosby in a basement in Georgetown when they were in college.
Was he doing comedy or just hanging out?
No, he's just hanging out.
Bill Cosby, why are you in that basement?
They were like, hey, it's a grown-up, but he's wearing sneakers. This is really weird. Little did they know it was a portent of things to come. You'd think that Microsoft would have really locked down the naming stuff after Metro... And trenched two. I mean, one was obviously a little higher profile than the other, but they didn't get their naming eggs, ducks in a row, eggs in one bucket, whatever it is, whatever metaphor you want to use.
It's kind of bullshit that Sky is a trademarkable or copyrightable
hey,
or
what's even more bullshit in terms of talking about media trademarks is that Spike TV had to pay Spike Lee.
That's the
to use the Spike TV.
Dumbest
you know what?
Thing I've ever heard.
And that's why Spike TV I don't think exists anymore. Or no, it still does.
Yeah, it does.
Has all the rights to do the Star Wars movies.
Isn't Spike TV what used to be the Nashville Network?
Yep.
I'm okay with them having to pay anything to anyone. Like if their mistake was that they didn't have to pay enough so that it wouldn't be worth them existing. Although I do like the TNG reruns. Should we talk about Google Glass?
No, let's talk about Spike TV more.
Really? What's your favorite Spike TV show?
Spike TV
they have
terrible.
Wrestling, right?
It's terrible.
Okay.
It's not,
I don't think I think Spike is going to go away. Isn't Spike? Wasn't Spike and G4 the same thing?
No,
no.
One was G4 TV.
Spike was the
TV.
National network.
Tech TV was
clearly
what G4
we watched
bought.
A lot of TV here.
Tech TV was great.
No, Tech TV was okay.
Tech TV was going better away than what Esquire. We
had. Tech TV had a lot of charm.
Tech TV did have some charm. It was better than what we had before. It was on DirecTV,
which was nothing.
Right. In the UK, it's illegal to use glass while driving now. So if you are driving wearing your Google Glass and you get caught, then you can get points and a fine.
All right.
Points
just,
are...
So just don't get pulled over for speeding while wearing your Google Glass.
Yeah, just throw them to the ground.
Speeding's okay in the UK, right?
You can go real fast in the UK.
Right.
Like a million kilometers an hour.
In Germany.
Right. It's basically the only thing holding you back is relativity. Which, speaking of...
And the fact that their cars are tiny.
Well, I mean, there is that too. Did you know, this is my favorite thing I learned today. There was an article in Scientific American that pointed to a paper that was done by some people, I think, in Australia. And they mathematically figured out that the reason mercury is liquid at room temperature, the metal mercury, mm-hmm. You know, it's like we've all held it in our hands, which they did that. When you were in high school, did
the
teacher pour the mercury in your hand? And was like, look, it's a metal. You can touch
it. You're not supposed to do that.
You're not supposed to do that.
No, that's bad.
No, that was really bad. It's really bad for you.
Yeah, don't chew the lead either.
No, we used to just, that's what our pacifiers were made of when we were kids back in my day.
That's how you teeth, right?
Yeah, you do soft.
It generation
gets, grinds into the teeth.
Okay.
So mercury is liquid. Mercury is right between, I think, silver and gold. It's in the same general metal middle part of the periodic table where the atomic structure and the electron orbitals. Basically, if you remember your college chemistry classes, which I don't at all, but I did a quick refresher.
Didn't take them.
Smart, best idea ever. Whether stuff is metallic or like gaseous or whatever, a lot of it is determined by the position of the electrons in different orbitals, and that determines how easy it is for the elements to share electrons between two similar atoms. So, for example, on a metal, most of the metals have electrons that are loosely connected to the proton, and what that means is they can go in, and I'm probably messing this up, so I apologize in advance, they can go and say two atoms of gold that are next to each other will share the electrons, share their outer electrons, and that makes it a metallic substance that's held together relatively closely. It makes it relatively solid. So when you look at things like iron and steel and aluminum and molybdenum and all the kind of atomic metals.
Did you just make that one up?
No, molybdenum is a real one.
It's a real one. It's in the middle there somewhere. That's why that happens. Now, mercury is square in the middle of this area, and for some reason that no one really understood, I mean, I guess they understood, but it took a while to figure it out, it's liquid at room temperature when everything else around it is metallic and solid. And the reason this is that inner set of orbitals are called the S orbitals, and on mercury, they're very tightly bound.
When you say orbitals, you mean the electrons around the protons?
So, yeah, there's different kind of... And this is where my knowledge is going to get real bad. But basically, there's different shapes of orbitals. And this is, I think, like a construct that we have to help explain chemical properties in a way that we can picture because it's stuff that's kind of intangible. So the S orbitals are the closest orbitals, closest electrons. They're the ones that are most tightly bound to the nucleus of the atom. And on Mercury, because of where it falls in the periodic table, those are completely filled. And also the electrons are going to be moving very quickly. So as a result of the speed at which they're moving, which is a significant portion of the speed of light, the electrons themselves weigh 1.5 times or thereabouts what they would if they were not moving at relativistic speeds. And that's why Mercury is liquid at room temperature, is because the high speed of the electrons are... changing the relative mass of electrons, which normally weigh practically nothing, and these weigh 1.58 times practically nothing, so that mercury is liquid. And these Australians, I think it was Australians, actually went through and did the math for electrons moving at non-relativistic speeds and electrons moving at relativistic speeds. We're like, yeah, math lines up with experimental results. This mystery, which wasn't really that much of a mystery, is completely solved. But relativity. It's also why gold is the color that it is, but we're not going to get into that.
Australia follows through.
It was nice work. They showed their work. This is the way I looked at it. I didn't read this Bristow Robot. Oh, this is, hey, this is a listener's choice episode of the podcast. I usually lead off with that, but I forgot this week. So now we're through the stuff that we put in, and we're into stuff that everybody else has submitted. And then there's some more stuff that we put in at the end. Did either of you read the Bristow Robot story? Skipping then.
No idea what that is.
I assume it's a robot that makes beverages.
Yes.
Makes coffee.
The Nokia Lumia.
Without giving, you know, snarky comments.
What?
Or wearing thick glasses.
You don't like Bristas?
No, I think that's the defining trait of a Brista. I think tattoos on arms and
arm tattoos
sleeves.
Are fairly common. It's a real job. That is a skill job.
It is an impressive job.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, you could.
No,
you know the level of attention to detail.
No, the Bristas are too intense.
Just having to deal with that many people on a daily basis would send you screaming.
Well, they're like scientists. Except they never write anything down.
It's on
the
campus of the University of Texas, apparently.
Really?
Oh, this is an old story. This is the one in the library? The giant, like, big room-sized machine in their library?
It is a coffee kiosk.
Yeah, we did a story about this, like, months ago on the site.
Well, never mind, then.
Old news.
Nokia's Lumia 1020 is being sold on AT&T. It's $299 on contract. We talked about that the other day.
Apparently had a not-so-great debut on Amazon.
Wow.
Is that like the box office for phones now?
Enderly.
Like Amazon rankings?
Enderly said this is the phone, who's an analyst, and frequently gets this kind of stuff wrong. He said that this is the iPhone for Nokia, which
says
that they're probably doomed.
For Nokia, this is the one they spent all the money
on. This is the one that's going to turn it all around, which means I think that they're probably doomed. Camera looks really nice.
What was it you said before
the show, Wes?
It's a $300 camera that
on contract.
That is the first. It's the first camera to run Windows Phone.
How much is the data plan?
That makes
for
me
your
less
camera?
Excited than the camera that runs Android, and I really am not excited about that stuff. The Galaxy camera,
right? I mean, the point is, who is going to buy a $300 Windows Phone? Not many people
on contract.
Who is going to buy a $300 camera? Maybe like five more people.
Wow, deep cutting analysis. QuakeCon keynote's happening right now. We talked about this a little bit a while ago. What is...
From the half hour we were able to listen to John Carmack while this podcast was
never
being set
stop.
Up, John Carmack talked about this next generation of consoles as being very interesting because the hardware is essentially the same. It's basically what we've Lloyd
he
has
confirmed.
Told us.
Yeah.
But from a development standpoint, he loved the 360, didn't like the PS3 that much, but he thinks the PS4 and the Xbox One, very, very comparable. He obviously didn't put his foot in one camp or the other, saying which one he wanted to back. He said he still doesn't really get Kinect as a appealing control mechanism.
He called it a fundamentally bad experience.
He said it was a zero button
interface.
Mouse.
He said that he gave a lot of crap to Apple when they released their single button mouse, and he thinks the Kinect is analogous to a zero button mouse, and that you have no precision, and also there's latency to worry about.
And he hates latency.
And he really hates latency. He talked about how game graphics are good enough that any creative vision can be put on screen. Like your most creative and far future looking creative director, Kojima, if he wants something put
Did
on.
Did he call it Kojima?
No, but that's basically what he's alluding to. If they want a game exactly how they want it on game consoles, you can do it now with the next gen hardware or today's PC hardware.
Did he talk about Toy Story? Can you run Toy Story in real time?
No, but the difference doesn't matter because you spend that extra. He specifically said if you spend all those extra cycles on pixel shaders, all that stuff is going to get lost in the poor color calibration of your home monitor, TV anyway, and that stuff should be better spent on frame rate. And he thinks it's appalling. It appalls him that game developers are still shooting for a 30 FPS target for their games when they should be at 60. And frame rate consistency, I think, is much more important for John Carmack than little bits more graphics fidelity.
Two things here. One, John Carmack just said graphics don't matter anymore.
No, he said that when evaluating graphics, pixel shaders and flourish are not as important as frame rate, and frame rate is still a very important core part of graphics.
The other thing is when we talked to Mark Rain at CES in, I think, 2012,
mm-hmm.
he explicitly said normal people don't notice frame rate. That's why everybody shoots for 30 frames per second, and if they don't get 30 frames a second, it doesn't matter. Now,
John Carmack speaking to a different crowd.
Mark Rain was making an engine that couldn't hit 30 frames a second on PS3 consistently.
Yep.
So perhaps his
worldview.
On the other hand, he also sold, you know,
that's more
significant
the
percentage
business.
Of games on this generation ran the Unreal Engine. So who cares?
More of business finesse and SDK prowess than the final experience.
Undoubtedly.
I'm 100% with Carmack, but I also think Mark Rain is completely right, just simply based on the number of people who buy TVs and leave the frame interpolation shit on and don't even know that it is on until you look at it and are like, is your TV messed up? And
the fuck's wrong with your
TV,
man?
I'm like, do you have that frame stuff on? And you're like, what is that?
Yeah. Not me. Some people like it.
I think he is right that the vast majority of people, and I'm sure gamers are going to be a little more discerning in that area, but still, with the number of kind of big budget cross market games that run on UE3, you know, kind of every big third person shooter type game, like, yeah, most of the people who buy those games are not going to notice that it is at 28 frames per second or 32 instead of, you know, 60.
Well, and for single player, I kind of don't. I'm okay with 30 as long as it doesn't sag. Like, if 30 is the floor and not the average, I'm okay.
That's the problem. The target is not necessarily the floor.
Right.
He also talked about NVIDIA Shield and how.
Is he pro or con?
He thinks the Android overhead. He's con, basically.
He didn't talk about the streaming stuff, though, at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah. The streaming.
He says frame drops and little hitches here and there are really noticeable.
The frame drop stuff is one of those things that I have consistently seen. Some people really see it, and some people don't see it at all. Like if you remember, well, I guess
it's not like the Matrix. Come on, it's just like if you play games, you notice frame drops.
No, but some people are much more sensitive to it. Or much like when we wanted to see if I'm from Canada.
But I don't notice the frame drops.
We would get Greg down to look for frame drops, and he would see them when otherwise we would have to get out a high-speed camera that we didn't have at Max PC. Because some people, you just kind of train yourself to not see them. It's like MPEG-2 compression artifacts. After a while, you have to look for MPEG-2 compression artifacts because you get used to
it. It's the lowering of standards.
Well, I mean, thanks, YouTube. Did he talk anything else, digital media or anything like that?
He could be talking about right now.
He's still going right now.
Still going. Digital media, he thinks that the reactions to the Xbox One stuff was maybe a little too much. And he really believes this is the last generation of consoles that will be in this, you know, big box war of consoles. 8 years later, it will be completely different.
He's probably right.
Yeah.
Nintendo did their annual sales numbers or quarterly sales numbers. It was great news for 3DS. Terrible news for Wii U.
Please be excited.
What? Is that what they said?
No. That's Square Enix's thing. But kind of the same mantra coming out of both of them.
Well,
please wait. Things will be good.
They sold a shitload of 3DSs and 3DS games.
Because the 3DS is great.
It is a nice piece. I have been playing a fair amount of stuff on 3DS because I've been traveling and
it's got a great software library.
It's fun. Yeah. I'm still a little like, have you played Animal Crossing in the past, right, Wes?
The GameCube one a lot.
Yeah.
And then just a tiny bit of the DS one and a okay amount of the Wii one, but mostly GameCube. I played for like a couple of years.
It is. Wow. Really?
I mean, not like straight through.
Yeah.
But there was a summer of my life that was Animal Crossing.
And then you will come back and check in on holiday days and see what's changed and
yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah. The new ones, like, there's new stuff added, but it's essentially the same game, just with some new stuff kind of layered on. And it's selling a crazy amount, which I can only assume is because of people talking about it on Twitter and like some minor multiplayer.
Really, really
stuff
good
that
buzz on that game.
Yeah. It's a very sweet game.
It's also a game where small changes to something that you're playing in a routine and on kind of a daily basis, like a small new system added to that game makes a profound difference to its longevity and appeal, I think.
But it's almost a little overwhelming now because now there's kind of too much stuff to keep up. There's way more stuff to keep up
with. So compared to like a Harvest Moon game or something, you're not doing nearly as much shit.
That's only for crazy people. Sorry, Harvest Moon guys. Wii U, they sold 1 million units of software and 100,000 consoles in the last quarter, I think, was the number, which seems real bad.
160,000 is real bad.
160,000 seems
units?
Real bad.
Yeah.
Units.
Worldwide?
Worldwide. Wow. And 1 million pieces of software. The 1 million pieces of software. I actually think, like...
1 million pieces of software, that sounds good.
Really?
In terms of, like, unit per attach rate?
Yeah, except, like, if you're a third-party developer... Well, A, they haven't released anything to speak of. Pikmin comes out this week, I think, which is the first party release since the launch window, really. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, Nintendo's making enough money on 3DS that they can keep plugging along with the Wii U, and either it'll work or they'll wait 5 years and do another console, right?
I don't know that the amount of money they're making off the 3DS is enough to totally offset that.
Well, no, but that's... Probably,
I mean, yeah, like Nintendo had a shitload of money in the bank after the Wii. They could bleed for a while and be okay in the broad sense.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that things are going well or will just turn around. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
The year of Luigi marches on.
It's so sad that they decided we're going to give Luigi this big.
Why would
big
you
year,
do that?
Make him the focus. And a lot of people love that, right? Because people love Luigi. And then
really?
And then that year is like the worst year of Nintendo for the past 7-8 years is just like the most dire situation they've ever been in. But hey, you can get Luigi DLC for stuff.
Yeah. Luigi marches on. Nothing stops. I don't think this is as bad as the N64 years, just to be clear. Like, back then, there was no... Like, GBA hadn't hit yet. N64 was dark times for Nintendo.
I mean, the Game Boy and Game Boy Color were still...
Game Boy Color was in
very
the N64
popular.
Time period, but that was late.
You think about how much money people spend now for new stuff versus... when N64 came out, what were the options for things to buy? If you're talking, you had to spend... What was it? $200 on N64.
It was pretty cheap,
Another $200 on a.
Then the games were $70 each for that
on a PlayStation at that point, and then
yeah.
It maybe you got a Saturn if you wanted everything.
Yeah,
maybe
you wanted
the Sega
CD, $200 games from Japan.
So you're spending that year maybe $600 on hardware and $1,000 on games and hardware total.
That money was worth more then.
Money was worth a lot more then. Now you're buying phones. You're buying tablets. Maybe two tablets, maybe a tablet and a shield.
You're buying Ecto-1As.
You're buying your game consoles, maybe two game consoles and handhelds.
Yeah.
Like, people are expected to spend a lot more these days, and I don't think people want to.
The PS1 was real affordable for what you got out of it. Like, games,
you get a DVD player.
Games being...
PS1.
Oh, CD player.
Sorry.
But, I mean, the games being really easy to produce, like, they didn't have that crazy $60, $70, $80 markup that some N64 games had.
Yeah.
And I forget how much the console cost, but, I mean, it was not, you know, $600 PS3 territory.
A lot of those games were $130.
And that's a really good point, because the manufacturing for discs was much cheaper than manufacturing for cartridges.
Oh, yeah.
Also because Sony made discs for other types of media, and they latched onto a media format that would be more cost efficient. They passed on those savings to people. We're seeing that now in terms of digital being cheaper than discs, but the game still costs the same.
I mean, one of the things that's really nice about the 3DS is that when a new game comes out, when Animal Crossing came out on Sunday morning, I woke up and I bought it on the store and downloaded it. And it took a while to download because it's a fairly large game. But like by lunchtime, I was playing the game. I didn't have to take my pajamas off.
It's actually kind of amazing that as ass backwards as Nintendo is when it comes to online and digital stuff.
Yeah.
I think some, if not all, of their games are like $5 cheaper digital.
Yeah, I think that... I want to say on the Wii U, everything's $10 cheaper if you buy it digital.
So that's
even third-party stuff.
And that is something that you don't really see on the other platforms.
No.
So that's cool.
Yeah, like if they would get the right stuff on digital purchases, I would be all for digital purchases on Nintendo. But since it's tied to the machine and not to an account, it's a little hard to encourage behavior. Like I would not – I do it, but I feel like I'm doing something dumb and taking a huge risk. Because if I lose my 3DS, I'm boned. I lose all my games.
There's some really draconian transfer
But you have to have the old hardware, as I understand it.
Yeah, because it's hardware tied.
Because it's tied to the hardware. Yeah, so that means if somebody steals my 3DS, they get my copy of Layton and Paper Mario and
they will
Animal
desecrate
Crossing.
Your town.
Yes, my town will be destroyed. Poor Cinder. Chromecast. Do we want to talk about Chromecast a little bit?
Did we talk about Chromecast last week? Was it announced
you
before podcast?
You hadn't used it yet.
I don't think it was announced. No, did we talk? We talked about.
I don't think we talked about it. I think it was announced after.
Hold on.
The podcast.
I can tell you.
Anyway, let's refresh.
We talked about it last week because we talked about the Nexus 7. Yes.
Yes, but no, we don't. We didn't have it yet. So,
do you have it?
Yeah, I've been using it for the whole week.
Oh, I didn't. Mine comes today.
Chromecast. Since last week, what's changed is that you no longer get the Netflix deal
because they ran out of those, or did that nobody get them?
No, early people. I got it. It was great.
Fuckers.
It saved.
$21?
$24.
Ooh.
It's $8 a month.
It's pretty good.
On my Netflix.
So that means you bought that thing for $11?
$11 plus tax and shipping.
Wow. Shipping was free because it was Prime, right?
No, you bought it from Google.
Oh, I got mine from Amazon.
It is a small USB or HDMI dongle that comes with a 3-inch USB extension cable. I don't know why the USB extension cable they gave you is just 3 inches. The back of the dongle has a micro USB port, and they do include a micro USB cable and wall wart to plug it in, not to charge, but to actually power it while it's being used.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, you have to plug it into the back of your TV or receiver and then plug it into power.
Can you plug it into a USB port on your TV?
I'm not sure exactly how many watts it takes. I think you need to use a wall wart.
I've seen people plug it in to the TV, but I haven't actually been able to.
So maybe it's small enough that it might not require that much power. It's Wi-Fi only, and
That's
I think that really kills it.
Yeah,
the screen sharing stuff for desktop, web browser, Chrome tab streaming is terrible.
You are not sharing your screen. You're
sharing the what's
tab.
In the tab, that specific tab.
I'm okay with that.
I was just going to say you're sharing what looks like a digital artist rendition.
Yeah, it is interlaced
digital
hell.
Camo rendition of your screen.
How far is your TV from your access point? It's pretty far, right?
Regardless, if setting it to the highest quality, I'll take the buffer. I mean, if the signal's weak, you get buffering and signal. But the image quality, when it gets through, should be the highest image quality. And at the highest image quality, it is shit.
So you can barely tell what you're even looking
so
at.
So what's your setup for this? You're sitting on the couch with the laptop and you say, hey, check out this YouTube video.
So, okay, I'll give you the setup. If you're on your couch and you're on a laptop, let's say laptop, not phone, not tablet, and you have the Chrome browser open and a tab open, in the top right hand, you have to install a plugin for Chrome, but in the top right hand corner, there will be a button that you can click and select the Chromecast.
Like in the extension area?
Right next to your settings. The settings bar.
Okay, so where your 1Password or whatever pops up.
Yeah, right next to the favorites icon.
Okay.
And you choose which Chromecast you want to send the tab to, because theoretically you could have many Chromecasts in your house. And it appears on screen. There's definitely latency. And makes sense because you're still sending from computer to router to access point back wirelessly over to the Chromecast. Very laggy. And also, like Wes said, it does not. The resolution is so poor, and there's so much terrible interlacing that's just not usable, and you can't read text.
It looks like a 320 by 240 image or something blown up to 1080p.
Yeah. And it's theoretically supposed to be high bitrate 720. When you're on YouTube, though, and right now the services that support are YouTube and Netflix, although companies like Hulu is looking into integration, HBO Go is possibly looking at integration, Vimeo does not have integration yet, but I'd be surprised if Vimeo doesn't have it. When you're in YouTube, and that's still on the laptop in the Chrome browser, your YouTube player inside the tab will now have a Chromecast icon right next to, for example, where the resolution settings are. And when you click that in the browser, then it pipes the stream, the address, to the Chromecast, and Chromecast begins downloading that stream to play on the TV.
That's the way it should work. That seems good.
That seems good, but it only works really well on a tablet. For example, Nexus 7, because if you're in the YouTube app and you want to send videos over to Chromecast, you can actually add them to a queue to Chromecast.
Oh, that sounds good.
Meaning that if you're you search for a video and I want to put this on the screen, and then if you hit the Chromecast button, I'll slide it into a TV queue. So whatever's finished playing Chromecast, it will then play the next video, and then create an infinitely long playlists, personalized, customized playlists.
So it's YouTube DJ.
It is YouTube DJ. While on the desktop, if you want to send stuff from the YouTube browser, that playlist option is not there that I've been able to find. And all you can do is send YouTube pre-made playlists, channel-made playlists, so that it'll play everything from one particular channel or one playlist that someone who created that channel has set up. Also, the way Chromecast is making money is that the ads then shown on YouTube, you cannot bypass. You see the full 30-second ad.
Well, that's the way mobile ads work in general.
If you're on the tablet, there's the button that you can click
sometimes
to skip.
It depends on – there's two different types of ads.
Channels can change that.
It's channel-by-channel setting.
For the channels that even have the skip, you can't skip it because there's no button on the TV.
Yeah.
You're just going to watch that 30-second ad. You don't get an ad between every YouTube video, so there's an algorithm that determines when you see ads. The Netflix stuff works really well.
Can you use non-YouTube, non-Netflix video? Like if you go to Vimeo, can you play those
Vimeo
videos?
Vimeo does not have a built-in Chromecast piping. You can do the Vimeo within the browser tab, but then it's laggy and low resolution. Netflix is the best implementation in that when you queue a Netflix video up, you can still do whatever you want on your laptop or on your tablet, but then you can go flip back into Netflix and then use that as a remote control for the volume, your captions, your scrubbing. Whatever.
So what if you're playing from a wired computer? Like what if you want to play HBO Go from a wired computer? Have you tried that? Is the performance okay? Because like when you're doing the same thing with an Apple TV, if you're streaming... Is that right? Can you even AirPlay
the point where it breaks,
with Wi-Fi off? I don't think you can.
The point where it breaks is the getting the Wi-Fi signal to Chromecast.
Okay.
And the fact that it's Wi-Fi.
Also, I just think that however they're doing the screen sharing thing is just not... I don't think the quality of it would be good even if the Chromecast was right next to your router.
As full disclosure, screen sharing from like a MacBook Air to an Apple TV is also a bad experience. Like I don't know how Apple... Because one of the things they pitched with Mavericks is that you're going to be able to use AirPlay to attach a second monitor to your display to your laptop, and that seems like crazy talk to me because it's always laggy and it always kind of sucks. So,
but this is still like super beta software, right?
The screen sharing stuff is beta.
I'm sure that's okay. Going to get better.
So the way you really want it to work is to hand off the stream information to the Chromecast and then have that grab it directly from the network rather than
and that requires
laptop up to the router
the
and then
content,
back down to the Chromecast.
The content host to integrate that feature in their player.
Which is the same place that we ended up with AirPlay on Apple stuff. This is basically what they've done is made a $35 AirPlay.
Well, the AirPlay stuff on Apple, any MP4 file, because you're playing, it's all the same player on iOS. It's MP4.
No, no. They have to implement a tag that says it's okay to AirPlay. I've read the spec.
So
like if you're doing raw MP4 files, if you don't have the AirPlay allowed tag, then you can't.
Apple
won't do it. It is 2 seconds in your template, but you still have to make a change.
This sounds like more than line of code because there's UI buttons that they have to implement. It shouldn't be that hard. The reason it's $35 is because they want everyone to buy it, and so people like Vimeo and other video hosts will then
they want to solve the chicken or egg problem.
Will support it.
That's good. A couple more things. Microsoft announced Surface information, sales and numbers. They sold $853 million worth of Surfaces. Is that RT and pros?
RTs and pros and revenue.
And they took a $900 million write-off. I think we talked about that last week. Samsung has been caught potentially cheating on benchmarks. Ars Technica broke this. I haven't actually read this.
This is on AnandTech, actually.
Okay.
Anand ran benchmarks and said that... on certain benchmarks, the processor was allowed to clock higher than on.
So they detected, they checked for benchmarks running, and then cranked the CPU speeds up. Lame. The video card guys got in trouble with that about 10 years ago. Video ads on the Facebook wall. I'm okay. That's fine. I guess that's it. That's it for news. I'm going to place anything else from you guys, Wes, Norm.
Nope.
I'm going to play some music, and then we'll talk about what we've been testing. Norman Chan, you've been using the HTC One Google Edition.
Yeah.
There's a video on the site where we talk about it at length.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
It's not on me right now. It's next to my other computer.
I'm glad that you didn't bring something to distract you during the podcast. That's good. You like it?
I love it.
It's very good?
It's excellent. And now having seen the Moto X...
You feel better?
I feel even better about it.
You have some cognitive dissonance.
Reinforcement.
You feel like you made a good decision.
1080p screen is wonderful.
You're not going back? What are you doing with your iPhone? Are you willing to smash it on camera?
No, the iPhone I still pay a lot of money for.
Well, so say theoretically we would reimburse you if we bring the high-speed camera out. Will you smash it with a hammer?
Saying reimburse me the full price of the iPhone 5?
I think we could probably do that. If you're willing to smash it on camera.
I will smash it on camera if I would get reimbursed for the full price of the phone I bought.
Okay.
So what, yes. $700?
Let's say with depreciation, $650.
I think we should look at the retail price of the phone, what
that's,
you could
that,
sell
that,
it for
that doesn't
today.
Work, though. I mean, wouldn't do that for your car.
Well, that's true. What would you do with it if you don't smash it with a hammer? Give it to a family member?
No.
Keep
I'll
it
still,
just
still
in
keep
case?
It. Still keep it.
Safety net? A little.
It's still plugged into a music player.
Joey's pumping iron over there.
Those pastels of iOS 7 might turn you around.
It's pretty good. It looks real nice when you're using it in person. Pretty saucy. Anything else? I mean, if you're curious about the HTC One Google Edition and what Norm thinks about it, you should watch the video.
Yeah, we've talked enough about it. I think it's a wonderful phone. Love everything about Android. The stuff we talked about in terms of DPI scaling, apparently there are some launcher replacements that will make full use of that resolution, which I'm going to start experimenting with.
Okay. That was loud. The mini drive? I got this mini drive thing. I ordered it. It was a Kickstarter, and I missed the Kickstarter, and it is a neat thing. If you have a MacBook with an SD card slot, so I guess it's a 13-inch or Pro, any of the Pros, I think. Basically, it is like a half-depth SD card, mini micro SD adapter that you can get that you then put a micro SD card in. And it's just a physical connection. It physically maps the pins from the full-size SD side to the micro size and fits in flush against the side of your laptop and lets you add whatever the current micro SD, XD, HC maximum size card is, which I think right now is 64 gigs.
So is the problem that with a full-size SD card, it sticks out?
It dangles out the side.
And that's just Apple's design.
Like, it's intentional. It's good. I'm okay with that.
When I actually, yes, because I always leave. I have...
Yeah,
I'm using the yoga, and you know what?
You forgot your SD card.
I forgot my SD card inside because it was flush. I got to remember to.
Yeah, it's also pretty hard on that because I use that one to transfer some stuff, the Lenovo, and it's really hard to get the card all the way in there.
Yeah,
And also, Wes ties into what you wrote 2 weeks ago or last week on the site. We published it last week. You wrote 2 weeks ago in that micro SD cards. The speeds are actually very comparable to full size. You're not losing.
They can be.
Well,
if you're buying the Extreme.
So, well, it's the Extreme or the Ultra?
Extreme is the fast one.
The Extreme is their new SanDisk's new one. Yeah.
So it's hard to find the Extremes in big capacities right now. Is I think the hitch. So I'm going to look and see which one I got. I got a 64 gig.
They do.
It was pretty expensive.
I'm not. Yeah, 64 is a little bit.
It was
rarer.
Like $80 or something like that. It was pricey.
But then you were talking about adding basically some additional permanent storage.
But yeah, it's the idea is. It's not for stuff that I'm actually working on. Like, I would never put video I'm cutting or something like that I actually need disk performance on. But if I want to store my iTunes library and some photos and other kind of bulk stuff, it's an easy way to add space to a 256 or 128 gig.
Are you putting something like
your
iTunes library in that?
I don't really carry music on the laptop anymore. I think what I'm probably going to do is put my Aperture library on there.
Would you put something like Dropbox in there?
Maybe, yeah. That's actually not a bad idea because my Dropbox is pretty big at this point.
Then what's the battery hit on that if you're constantly accessing?
Well, that's why we're talking about it on the podcast rather than, I got to do tests. We got to find out how it works.
Yeah, I'm curious about if you have a Dropbox emergency Dropbox to go on an SD micro SD to SD adapter. What the read write battery drain?
Well,
would be on that.
Yeah, and there's also questions like what format. Like you don't want to run it in exFAT. Because then you lose all the journaling stuff, and you can't run you can't back it up with Time Machine and stuff like that. So you have to format it with the macOS journal file system and all that kind of stuff. And then you can never use it on Windows, which is probably okay. But yeah, there are questions to be answered about this. This
how much was it?
The adapter is like it's cheap. It's like $15, $20 because it is a physical. It's a shell. With some wires from pins to pads.
It's just like any other adapter, but half the size.
Exactly. It is literally just like the SD card adapter that comes with your micro SD card.
Thanks, Apple, for charging a lot for storage space.
I think actually the pricing on the storage space is actually pretty reasonable these days. I mean, it's more than you should pay for it.
For how fast their soldered on stuff is, it's pretty. I don't think it's too bad. the fact that it is right on the motherboard and they are actually delivering speed that justifies that, I think is good.
Yeah.
There was definitely a time where how difficult it was to buy those upgrades at a reasonable price, and then the fact that they made it difficult to replace stuff as well was bullshit.
Yeah.
But they're actually giving you really good speed for what you're paying for.
That's assuming you get the right SSD.
I guess they do have different ones.
Yeah, there's different vendors.
Yeah.
Oops. I also got my speed booster. So you and Adam talked about the Metabones speed booster for Canon to NEX a few months ago. And it seemed like, to me, that seemed primarily for someone who was going to shoot video with E-mount cameras, like the FS700.
It's an E-mount adapter to use it with any other type of, you buy the specific one for your lenses.
Right.
But
well, at the time, all they had was the EF and I think Leica. So now they have, they just released the Nikon one the other day. The neat thing about the Canon one was it had logic. So it would translate autofocus and aperture information, I think. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
To the lens from the body. The Nikon one is all manual. It's we should explain what the speed booster is. It's a lens adapter with a lens inside it, and what that does is it focuses down 35 millimeter lenses into an APS-C sensor area. So instead of, like, normally if you use a 35 millimeter lens with an APS-C camera, there's a crop. So depending on which camera it is and what lens it is, it can be what, between like 1.5 times and 1.75 times, Norm? Is that right? Or is it
wilder
than that? No, I'm talking about when you're using without the speed booster. Yeah. It depends on the lens and the sensor, right?
It depends on the size
and the adapter.
Sensor.
Yeah. I've been shooting with a bunch of old Nikon lenses.
Which, like, have manual apertures.
AIS. Yeah. Like old lenses. Pre-automatic aperture autofocus lenses. So AIS and AI lenses, mostly AIS. And the speed booster was awesome for that. Because I already have the ability to adjust aperture on the lens itself, which I actually quite like. And then all I have to do is manually focus, and you got much more light in on the sensor. So you got one full f-stop faster lens. And also you don't have the weird crop. So your 50 millimeter lens looks like a 50 millimeter lens, and your 24 millimeter lens is a wide angle lens, not a 36 millimeter equivalent, which is what it ended up being when I was just using a straight through adapter. Anyway, it's really neat. I got it the other day, and I got to do some test shots with it last night, and it is fucking spectacular and awesome, and I like it a lot.
It's $400.
The Nikon. So the Canon one was really expensive because it has to have firmware updates and stuff like that. It's like $650. The Nikon one was $420 or $430, and they ship it straight from Hong Kong, and it came in like 3 days, which I thought was kind of cool.
Right.
But I'll do more with that once I've had time to use it a little bit more. You want to talk about Nexus 7 stuff, Norm?
Sure. I got a Nexus 7 and got it promptly replaced.
Oh, really? They switched it out already?
I got it. Got the first one on Saturday.
Yeah. Did you order from Amazon?
I ordered from Amazon because they announced it last week, but Google originally said they would be on sale on the 30th, and then Best Buy and Amazon unloaded their pre-order page on Friday. So pre-ordered Friday, got it on Saturday for one-day shipping, and broke Saturday night, screen died.
Uh-huh.
It went online to immediately schedule a replacement and got the replacement on Monday.
That's pretty impressive.
That is very impressive for Amazon.
Yeah,
And then I just have to send the old one back. Otherwise, it'll charge me $250.
Yeah.
The tablet so far has been really good.
Have you installed the update that supposedly fixes the stuttering, the 4.3 update?
The 4.3 is the very first thing, even before you can turn
there's
it
another
on.
One that's hit since then. I thought there was one that hit today. Maybe it was Nexus 4.
4.3 was the very first thing that got installed when I turned on both Nexus 7s, even before I could even put in my info. Has 1920 by 1200 display. The screen is really nice. You can call it a tall forehead and a big chin on the bottom, but these things aren't really noticeable.
That's actually for the original Nexus 7. Sorry, they released an update today that fixes stuttering if you had stuttering problems with 4.2 on the original Nexus 7.
Check on your original Nexus 7. And I don't know what else there to say about it until we use it more. But I think it's a safe buy right now if you're really jonesing to buy one.
The only, after using it for a few days, the only thing that I really, really don't like, and it's the same problem I had with the last one, is that it doesn't get dim enough. Like the brightness level goes down to a level that's still too bright to use in a dark room, like if you're laying in bed reading.
Even if with an app overlay?
You have to use an app overlay, which doesn't reduce the backlight brightness. It just puts a dark a filter over the pixels, so it makes everything a little bit gray.
Isn't there a Flux app for, I think there's an iOS one now.
You can get a Flux, well, that you have to jailbreak to use the Flux iOS, Flux for iOS.
Is there one on Android?
There's one
as well?
On Android, but that's not exactly what I'm talking about. That changes the color temperature, sure. Which would help.
Yeah.
But like even using the sepia background on the Kindle app with the brightness turned all the way down, both on the OS and in the Kindle app, it's still really, really bright by default for like reading in bed.
Still bad for your eyes anyway.
It's like, I like to get that as like, I go all the way dim and that's where I go. So yeah, but it's a really nice tablet. I mean, it's a like significant improvement from what I've used so far. We talked about the Chromecast already. Do you want to talk about the Yoga 11S?
Sure. This is a great laptop. We'll be doing a full video on this very soon. But
you posted some thoughts.
This is a really nice laptop. Battery life is not exactly what I want it to be, but performance is exactly what I was expecting. And if you want to do a direct comparison with the MacBook Air, it has a full SD card slot, which MacBook
That's
Air doesn't.
Nice.
And it folds all the way back, and it has a touchscreen. And these are the defining characteristics of
Does it have
the
two
Yoga
USB
line.
Slots?
It has two. One USB 2 ports. And one USB 3.
Okay. If this had come out when all the other Ivy Bridge laptops came out, would you... Because I know you're not too keen on it now because you've gotten kind of hooked on the Haswell battery life. If this had come out with all the other Ivy Bridge stuff last year, would you be telling a different story?
If this had come out last year with all the other Ivy Bridge, initial Ivy Bridge laptops, it would be $200 more expensive and battery life would have been even worse. So I don't know if the tune would have been different.
Mm, okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay. I downloaded new StreetPass games because the sales rabbit caught me. Do you know about the sales rabbit?
I've heard of him.
Norm, do you know about the sales rabbit? So, do you know what StreetPass is?
It's a 3DS thing.
It's a 3DS thing. When you have a 3DS and you go to places where there's a lot of people...
Who also have 3DSs.
Who also have 3DSs. Your 3DS communicates with those across the wireless Wi-Fi, just point-to-point, no internet connection required. And then that triggers a bunch of really silly games that you can play that are based on the number of people you connect to using StreetPass. A few weeks ago, there was an update. It happened, I think, while we were at Comic-Con. And when you updated your 3DS StreetPass app and came back to it, there was this rabbit there. And the rabbit comes up and says, hey, I've got a new StreetPass game. You want to know more about it?
He's wearing a trench coat.
He's not wearing a trench. I wish he was. He would be much less shady if he was telegraphing how shady he is by wearing a trench coat. They changed the design of the thing. So there's two games that came with the 3DS. One is about sharing little tiles of pictures. The other is a kind of light RPG with some weird combat elements. The new games, the update put those games on a street. They're two holes. And then the rabbit pops out of a hole on these other four holes. And it's like, hey, I got a new StreetPass game. You want to know about it? And so you say, okay, yeah, I'd like to know about it. And he describes the game. He's like, you want to know more? Or do you want to just buy it now? Or no thanks. And like you go through all these conversations. At this point, when I was at this point, I didn't know. I thought the games were free. I was like, why is it making me fucking talk to this rabbit to download these games? This is really weird. And then it turns out that you say, okay, yeah, I'll buy the game. And then the rabbit says, let me connect to the internet and see what they cost. It's like, wait, what?
The rabbit doesn't know how much they cost?
The rabbit has to go to the internet to see what the current price is for the game. And then it gets worse because he says, hey, I can do something. I can cut a deal for you right now. We're running a special. If you buy all four of the games, you only pay the price of three of them. So it's $15. Instead of $5 each for four games, you can get four games for $15 sight unseen. But it's only good when you buy the first game. So it's a limited time offer.
Smartest fucking rabbit ever.
So at first I was incensed. I was like, no, fuck you, Nintendo. I'm not. Your fucking sales rabbit bullshit isn't going to work on me. And then I went out at Comic-Con, or where was it? I brought it with me to the thing we went to last Saturday.
Renegade
Craft Fair. And I got 10 street passes. And then I was sitting there looking at the street passes like, man, I could probably do some real damage with these 10 dudes in the four new games. And so I sales bunny worked.
You did it to troll them?
No, I did it because I wanted to play the street pass games.
Okay.
Street pass games are strangely compelling. Like, I know you guys are looking at me like I'm crazy. People out there know.
No. Describe a typical street pass game.
Well, so it gives you a little bit of joy when you come back and you're like, oh, hey, there's people on my 3DS. And what happens is you go to the Plaza Gate, the Mii Plaza Gate, and the Mii's of all the people that you met are there. And sometimes kind of it's people met, you know.
Walk by.
Huh?
Met meaning, you know, you was it
we're within
close
30 feet
of
for 20 seconds.
Okay.
But it only does up to 10 at a time. So like if you're someplace like PAX or Comic-Con, you have to keep checking all the fucking time.
Okay.
In fact, actually somebody busted me while I was standing in the hallway at PAX last year
for reloading,
like cleaning out my street passes so I could get more. And then
I'm sure people do it all the time.
Yeah, of course. There's a whole dedicated areas of PAX dedicated to street pass cleaning. But like the things you get in the street pass collection games are tiles of pictures, and when you complete the pictures, then you get the normal Skinner machine rewards of, hey, you can see the full picture and it's 3D and it's cool. And then the street pass picture trading game is neat because you can only trade tiles with people who've already collected those tiles. So if you have a bunch of tiles, then your Mii is more valuable than a person who's not collected many tiles. It's real silly stuff, but it adds some social pressure to keep playing the game, and also, more importantly, to carry the 3DS around you everywhere, which I think is probably what Nintendo's ultimate goal with the Street Passes were. But the Street Pass Bunny is a real monstrous creation, and we should not support the Street Pass Bunny. That's all I wanted to say. I want to get out there. At Tested, we are against the Street Pass Bunny.
He's probably using that money to fund his coke habit.
Yeah, he's got a drug problem or something. He's a dick.
Maybe he just needs some pants.
I kind of want to say he was wearing pants, but not a shirt.
I think rabbits wearing pants are sketchy.
I always feel like rabbits should wear waistcoats, but not pants. I'm okay with that.
What about waders?
No. How would they hop with waders on? Doesn't make sense.
Weirdly.
Awkwardly. Thumping into stuff. Let's play some music and take some questions.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
We don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom. You know, Wes, I didn't ask you if you were testing anything.
I'm kind of building up to a big gaming mouse
Ooh.
Test session for the wire cutter, but Ooh. I'm kind of waiting for stuff to get show up. So I've got a few mice, but I haven't really sat down seriously and spent much time with them.
If there's a specific mouse people want you to test, should they tweet at you?
Nope.
Okay. No feedback from the audience. You heard that.
I have gone through many, many gaming mice to narrow the scope.
What is?
Have you heard of the company Logitech?
I think so.
Are they making gaming mice?
I like the Razer.
The Razer or the other Razer?
The Razer.
Okay.
Here is our first question. It was recorded on a Tuesday.
Hello, Will, Norm, and anyone else in the podcast today.
Hometown. Congratulations, Wes.
Warsaw, Indiana, my hometown, once jailed John Dillinger for him to escape using only his fists. On to my question. I'm a budding filmmaker in search of a new camera. Right now, I only have a GoPro Hero 3 Black Edition. My question is this. Should I buy the NEX7 right now with only one lens, or should I wait for the Canon 70D, as I already have two Canon lenses? One more question. I just finished watching Bricked. And Norm, did you mean to destroy both models? You look pretty determined, but then acted surprised afterwards. Much love, and always be testing.
Good. Norm, such a good actor.
Wow.
Norm.
Whoa, it's loud. Answers are by the 70D, and yes. There we go.
That's it?
Yeah.
That sounds like the shittiest jail ever also.
Yeah, if he break out with his bare fists.
Maybe John Dillinger was pretty badass.
Did he just punch his way through the wall?
I'm sure he's pretty badass. It sounds like they were probably like transferring cells or something. He just beat the shit out of some cops and walked out. I don't know.
Were they called cops back then? Were they lawmen?
Coppers?
No, that's later. And in England. Hey, copper! You know.
Prisons are terrible places.
Do you know this from personal experience?
No, I live from reading.
Ah. When you drive by a prison,
there's
do you feel guilty?
One, you don't pick up hitchhikers, but there's one by
the North Bay. Richmond Bridge. Right, yeah, San Quentin is the one you're thinking about.
It's right there, and you got to cross right by it if you're going off the Richmond Bridge, going on 101.
Yeah.
It
looks like real scary. Have you been on the Alcatraz tour? I know Norm has.
I haven't.
No. Really? You've never been to Alcatraz?
People who live in San Francisco don't go to Alcatraz tours.
Do you not have people come in from out of town that want to go on San Francisco tour stuff?
They can do that.
I want to do it sometime.
You should go on that. Like, you should do it once. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I'd love to go. There will be a time.
The thing is, like, we had a period where we went probably twice a year when people would come visit when we first moved here, until we finally just started dropping people off at the wharf and we're like, good luck. We'll see you in a few hours.
Yeah.
There's an awesome audio tour. That you put on the headphones and you walk around, it tells you where to stop, and you see like the Birdman cell and all that.
Do they
do
a night tour?
They do.
They do a sleepover?
They used to do sleepovers. I don't know if they still do.
I think they stopped that.
Why?
Norm, you went to that Half-Life event.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
You weren't at the Half-Life launch on Alcatraz at night?
Nope.
Did you choose not to go because it was on Alcatraz?
I did not know about it. When was that?
Oh, you were still an intern, I guess, then.
I also did not go to the premiere of the TV show Alcatraz, which is also on Alcatraz.
I didn't go to that.
I think someone at Whiskey was invited, but also I'm not sure if they won. Patrick might have been invited.
Hmm. Is that because he was such a big Prison Break fan?
No, it was a J.J. Abrams joint.
Oh, that's right. I highly recommend the Alcatraz tour. It's really fun. It's like, just go and expect to have a cheesy tour, but it is going on that tour gives me a full appreciation for the fact that it made me crystal clear that I never, ever, ever want to go to jail.
I want to relive Dirty Harry 3.
You could totally do that.
Or The Rock.
I don't know if they have the Mario level where you have to roll under the flaming death spiral thing.
The tourists in The Rock got stuck in the prison.
That's true. You can go stand inside a cell and say lines from The Rock.
Yeah.
You can say those lines.
Oh,
the shower doesn't look at all like the shower in the Rock, though. So, we got one more question. It's audio.
Hey, Will and Norm. This is Matt from San Diego,
Wes.
And I'm hoping you guys can talk about a relatively budget-friendly setup for creating videos that don't look terrible. I want to post some Maker stuff about electronics projects, so mostly just talking shots and workbench demos, nothing crazy. So I'm thinking about using a smartphone or maybe a GoPro for the camera. Do you guys know of any alternatives there? Also wondering if professional video editing software like Final Cut is worth the upgrade from the free stuff you can get. As for the machine, I currently have a MacBook Air. Can I get by on that, or should I look at an upgrade there? And also, any thoughts you have on lighting, microphones, and other logistics would be appreciated, as your content always looks and sounds really good. Love the site. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
So inexpensive video editing software is easy. If you find that like you've aged out of iMovie or Sony Vegas, which I think is like $50, Premiere Elements is $100 or $150 and is quite good. I haven't actually used that, but I know I have spoken to people who have expertise on this and they recommend that.
I feel like for really simple editing, which sounds like all you would have to do, iMovie's fine. I tried to use iMovie on my MacBook Air to edit some 1080p video, which was probably much higher bitrate than like the iPhone would shoot because it was from the NEX. But that did not work. Like,
really?
It was like 2 frames a second of trying to scrub through stuff. So
and you have the Sandy, you have the Ivy Bridge,
Sandy Bridge,
Sandy Bridge. Yeah. So I would say if he ends up shooting 1080p stuff, if it's from a phone, maybe that the MacBook Air can handle it. Well, but if it's anything higher res or bitrate than that, it's not going to be good enough.
So this is where the benefit of using better software is, because I use Final Cut Pro on a 13-inch
10 or Pro
10. Well, 10 Final Cut. I guess it's Final Cut 10. It's not Final Cut Pro 10. I've used 7 on this as well because they use an intermediate codec that's a little less CPU intensive. So the bad news is it means you have to transcode your MP4 H.264 video to ProRes when you import it. But that also means that you can edit at a higher speed. I don't think it's worth spending $300 on, and I probably wouldn't buy 10 at this point, although it is pretty easy to use, especially if you're familiar with iMovie. I do 1080p from the GoPros all the time on a 13-inch Ivy Bridge MacBook Air. Make sure you have enough memory is the only thing I would say.
But should he buy anything better than a... I think...
I would say start with iMovie and then go to...
Well, he was curious about the camera that he would use to shoot too.
So I would look at I would buy a Hero 2.
And I would say
he has a Hero 3.
Or he has a Hero 3. So perfect.
That's
done.
Good enough. Yeah.
The only benefit of the Hero 2 over the 3 is that you have an audio line.
Wait, did this
level
guy?
The last guy had the Hero 3.
Buy Hero 2. Buy Hero 3.
Yeah.
Or just if he has an iPhone 5 or equivalent past year Android phone, that's good enough. Get a
little stand.
Yeah.
The benefit of the Hero is that you can control your field of vision a little bit more than you can with a smartphone camera. So there's a wide, narrow, and a full view setting, a full fisheye setting. For audio stuff, a good microphone is very important if you're going to do any kind of voice recording. If you're not doing live audio while you're shooting, so if you're going to just shoot a bunch of video and then cut it and then talk over it, just buy a Blue Snowball or a Yeti, buy a good $60, $70, $100 a USB mic. That you would use for podcasting or something like that, and you'll be plenty good. You don't have to worry about buying expensive lavs or boom mics or something like that if you're not going to talk over while you're doing the video. And I would recommend, for what it sounds like you're doing, I would say you should cut the video and then do a narration rather than the other way around. It's much easier. Do we get everything?
Yep, I think so.
Yeah, GoPros are great for that kind of stuff, and you can stick them anywhere. That's the big benefit. And also, since the twos use full-size SD cards instead of micro SD cards, memory's a lot cheaper. The cards are a lot cheaper for them. So that'll do it for questions. If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. We like audio questions. If they're under 45 seconds and don't sound like you're recording while you're, at a herd of wild stallions or something like that, we will be back next week. Oh, wait, we didn't talk about what's on the site. We have a bunch of good stuff on the site this week. You wrote a fascinating story about hacking Teddy Ruxpin, Norm.
It was like a reference to an Ars Technica story.
Well, you linked to an Ars Technica story that was fascinating. I didn't know that you could hack Teddy Ruxpin, but the dude who bought Arduino stuff and plugged it into the reverse engineered the electronics on the Teddy Ruxpin to control the robot motors and all that stuff is a really neat project.
There was a wall of Teddy Ruxpins.
It was that guy. So
terrifying.
Ars Technica is Sean Gallagher, who's also at Maker Faire. We met him at when they were here for, not WWDC, but one of those events. He was at that dinner with us.
DC? Maybe not.
But he went to Maker Faire the next day, and at Maker Faire we saw that wall, and the guy who built that wall was an art installation. He's from Portland, and he had arranged 80 Teddy Ruxpins and set a system with Arduino to light up individual ones as they would pull down sentences from a website. And this website was some emotional thing, and they would read them out and synthesize voices, and it was real creepy.
Yeah. I got to imagine that if you have that in your house, if you walk in and you wanted to really prank someone, you would have all the Teddy Ruxpins come on and start talking at the same time, and that would be really scary.
I think anything that involved a Teddy Ruxpin in your house would probably be over the creepy threshold just by default.
Are you guys, was Teddy Ruxpin still around when you guys were kids?
Not
it was
me.
Old, right?
There were ads when I was a kid.
My sister had Teddy Ruxpin, and I was super into it because it was a robot. And
well,
she
you
thought
put a
it
cassette
was her,
in the back.
Yeah. She thought it was her teddy bear friend, and I always wanted to take it apart. But I was when that was given as a gift, I was explicitly instructed that there would be severe consequences if I dismantled Teddy Ruxpin.
You lit on a fire at Thanksgiving?
No, I wouldn't have lit it on fire, but I would have taken it apart to see how he worked.
And Lisa then, cried and...
Yeah. Was that a Simpsons?
That was Simpsons.
Yeah. Yeah, we were... fucking with Teddy Ruxpin would have been real bad news for me. There's a ton of video from Comic-Con coming on even as we speak. We also have a boatload of awesome videos scheduled for YouTube's Geek Week next week, starting on, I think, Monday morning, right?
Sunday night. Sunday morning.
Yeah. So check the site regularly. We have cool stuff. And there's a bunch of other... topics of pertinent interest coming up with YouTube's Geek Week as well. So I guess that'll do it for us. Anything to plug, Wes?
Not too much.
What's your wire cutter latest? The USB 3 thing? Key thing?
Yeah, I haven't done anything since the mouse. I've kind of been working on gaming mice. I had a post I wrote yesterday that I originally wasn't thinking would go up on the site, and then I was like, well, maybe this should, about pulp sci-fi.
Oh, I thought it was good. Yeah.
I've been reading, and it ended up being pertinent, so that was fun.
How did you get into pulp sci-fi?
The
Han Solo.
Yeah. So this is the books I've been reading are by this author who wrote the Han Solo Adventures books that came out in like 78, right after A New Hope.
So hold on, that's not Splinters of the Mind Eye, it's the other ones.
Yeah, okay. This guy named Brian Daley. And they're actually really good.
He wrote a bunch of books.
Are they really good with quotes? Or
I mean, they're not literature, which is kind of what the post is about, right?
Yeah.
But they are like super lean and fun and well written, and
like serials.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pulp.
Very much. And don't take themselves like real seriously, like a lot of the newer, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars stuff.
You're in trouble now.
Yeah. And I mean, I've read way too many Star Wars books, but they're some of the best, I think.
Did you ever read Splinter of the Mind's Eye?
Uh-uh. One of the few I haven't read.
So next time I go to Tennessee, I'll bring you, because I have my copy
I probably don't want to read it.
It's,
I know what it is. I mean,
so it was written before they realized there were going to be sequels, right? It's in the same category as the Han Solo Adventure.
Well, I think
stuff.
I think it's not even like, it's not licensed or something. No, weird. When it came out, it's very much like not fan fiction, but it's like weird alternate universe spin-off.
It's not part of canon.
Yeah.
But that's because it was assigned and written when they thought Star Wars was a one-off, not a sequelable franchise.
But see, that's where it all seems weird and cloudy to me, since George Lucas clearly had outlines.
Dude, you saw the outline.
Yeah, but as soon as that movie made a fuck ton of money, he knew like what was going to be. He was like, all right, this is going to be Empire, this is going to be Return of the Jedi. Maybe it took a few years to actually, you know, plot out the whole stories for those, but I cannot fathom how Splinters of the Mind Eye could have come out with this divergent story, and then after that, George Lucas be like, well, okay, this is like, he knew already that he was not going to do.
Well, the story didn't diverge. I mean, it diverges, but it's not like anybody permanent dies. It's just, it is another interaction between, Han Solo doesn't make an appearance, one. It's R2-D2 and C-3PO, and I think Princess Leia and Luke and Darth Vader. That's it. It's real weird.
I am sure he planned it as a spinoff when he gave, you know, permission or whatever for it to come out.
I wonder if maybe he thought that the Star Wars movies, if there were going to be more, would just be about Han Solo and Chewbacca going out and having cool adventures and shit.
Is it after Star Wars 1?
Yeah.
Han Solo was supposed to die in Star Wars 2.
In Return of the Jedi,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird stuff. If you can get a copy of Splinters of the Mind Eye, it's a fascinating piece of history. I want to go read the Han Solo Adventures now.
The great thing about them is, I mean, they're like, you can read one in 4 hours.
Perfect.
5 hours.
That's Splinter of Mind's Eye is the same thing. Yeah.
They're like 200 pages. You know.
There's a bunch of Force stuff that doesn't involve midichlorians, too, so that's nice. It's good times.
So this guy's other books are pretty fun, too. They feel a lot like Star Wars, just minus the Star Wars stuff.
Okay.
It's just kind of in the style of, like, grand space adventures.
So as 50 Shades of Grey is to Twilight?
I could not say.
And on that note,
it's romance novels.
Yeah. Today's outro comes to... Oh, if you have a question, it's podcast@tested.com. Today's outro comes from Kloppy. If you want to know how to submit an outro to This Is Only a Test, there's instructions. If you Google raw outro song file, it's the number one result, and the instructions are there. Make sure when you upload your file to SoundCloud, you make it downloadable. Thanks, Kloppy. Here's your outro.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Tested.
Just drove up with my van. I was like, hey, kids, any of you want some ice cream?
Ooh, that's an old one.
Tested.